The story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
And be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Woo! It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
Hey, this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you?
God! Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the wonderful folks of the Wild Talk Radio Network. You can join us in our chat room, which is available through the wildtalk.com site, or you can also join us through OWW Radio. If at any point you wish to join the show, there's two ways to do it. You can dial our toll-free number, which is 877-588-9877. When you come to the prompt, you hit number one. If you're technologically cool, unlike myself, you can type Sir Rockin' in your Skype system, and he will be more than wonderfully happy to put you on the air with us tonight. Is a special evening because it's Cover Tunes night. Now, you're probably going, dude, why are you doing Cover Tunes? What's the point of that? Well, it involves our special guest tonight, depending on what time is Adventures in L.A., and we are scheduled to be joined by a gentleman who, for the majority of his career, you knew as Mark Jindrak, formerly of WCW and WWE. However, for the last 5 or 6 years, in promotions such as AAA, CMLL, and currently Lucha Libre USA Masked Warriors, which is featured on MTV2 and their Spanish language channel, which is called Tres, he is known now as Marco Corleone. This coming weekend, if you are in Las Vegas at the Thomas and Mack Center on the campus of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, which my mother could never say for the life of her. She would butcher that name. UVNLNVLD. Yeah, UNLV. We'll talk with him about the recent roster additions, his time in Mexico, his time in WCW, WWE, all that fun stuff. We will be joined possibly by other members of the Wild Talk Radio Network. We are joined right now by a man who, I'm not sure if he's still on his drip or not, from his recent stint at a very lovely suburban Cleveland area hospital, the one and only Spug from Wrestle Talk Radio has joined us. Good evening, sir, and how are we feeling tonight?
I can't wait till Thursday.
Uh-oh. Is Thursday a good day?
Yes. See, when they took my gallbladder out, they gave me this tube called a drainage tube.
And oh, yeah.
It goes up into the site where the gallbladder was, where the infection was, and it drains crap out. Well, I've had this thing in me since Friday, and it's literally sutured to my body. So there's no way for me to take it out myself. I have to have somebody else take it out, or it would have been out by now. The thing is falling off. The tape is falling off. The stuff that's holding it to the site where it is entered into my body is falling off. Literally, the only thing that is holding it on are these sutures? Now, I went and looked it up and tried to research this thing. These things are only supposed to be in for 2 to 3 days maximum.
Wow. Oh, great. So you're walking around with something that shouldn't even be in you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are a lawyer listening, he will give you his phone number off the air in a little while.
2 to 3 days maximum. Thursday when I go in at 1 o'clock to have this thing taken out, it will be almost 6 days total that this thing has been in my body. I cannot wait till Thursday till this thing comes out.
A lot of people can't wait till Thursday because that'll be the last TNA Impact before Hardcore Justice The Last Stand. And we will discuss that now because I think it's a better topic than what's been going on in WWE.
I'm sorry. Now that you brought this up, when I was in the hospital, because I was bored and I needed something to watch because cable, you know, just is boring, I went and bought a month subscription to WWEClassics.com, like $4.
That's all it is, really?
Yeah, it's like $4 for a month. Nice. And so I've been watching countless hours of wrestling footage. And there is a show that is on there called ECW Legacies.
Interesting. I did not know that.
And it's hosted by Joey Styles and Tommy Dreamer.
That's it. I wonder how often they update that.
The last episode that came out was in the middle of July.
Wow.
And Tommy Dreamer was on it. And they're talking about great ECW rivalries and stuff like that. And they mention the Dudleys, and they show a Dudleys match. It was Dudleys versus the Hardcore Chair Swinging Freaks. Axel and Ian. Yeah. No. Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten.
Oh, Balls and Axel?
Yeah,
oh,
Balls and Axel. All right. So, but Joey and Tommy are doing their banter back and forth, and Tommy says, and I quote, "It's probably not going to be the last time you see the Dudleys in the ring, because if I remember correctly, Tommy Dreamer made an appearance at the end of the match to break it up. Because that was when they lit Balls' face on fire." And he says, "It's probably not the last time you're going to see me in the ring square off with the Dudleys. So if it's true, maybe one of the matches for this Hardcore Justice pay-per-view is going to involve the Dudleys and Tommy Dreamer."
Well, who knows, because they've been real, real secretive with this show. And the way Impact ended last week, you saw what was a very interesting match. This was another week of great TNA TV. It's very surprising to see what's going on. And I'm still confused. I know Mace was very vocal about it on the Sunday night show. I'm wondering who actually is doing the writing, if it's part Tommy Dreamer and part the TNA group, because as you guys mentioned Sunday, it seems like the last couple weeks it's been open TNA, closed EV 2.0, open EV 2.0, sorry, I got my initials mixed up there, and then smooshed in the middle is an hour and change of the event, so it's interesting to see. Sorokin is saying
it's all
that.
Paul Heyman.
Yeah. Well, he supposedly was on a conference call with Spike TV a couple days ago. Some of the sites were spreading that story around. I'm not 100% sure on that one. So it was another week of really great programming. However, we found out, thanks to Mr. Bischoff and Brooke Adams, who I can't call her Miss Tessmacher, because all I get is Valerie Perrine from Superman in my head, and I'm going, Warner Brothers is suing your butt. Now, there's also been rumors that Tommy Dreamer on other shows, I believe he was on Sorokin's Friends of the Monday Night Mayhem crew, who were a part of this last week, thanks to Scott Hudson, that he said in podcasts and all this other stuff that Paul has an open invitation to this event. Now, as Mace joins us, who is an ECW fan, is that like the biggest, like, everyone in the room knows the secret except one person, and it may be Paul Heyman? So, first to Spug, then to Mace. Is this really just Tommy Dreamer going saying, yeah, I'm doing all this stuff, right, Paul? Or is this legit? Is it 100% it's Tommy and the couple matches that have been rumored already? Obviously, you saw it looks like we're going to get Raven versus Dreamer at the pay-per-view. It looks like we're getting Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn. So what's your opinion on this? Since you've been watching old ECW stuff, first to Spug the Mace, who's really pulling them the strings? Is it Tommy or is it Paul?
I think it's both, but you're a big sports fan, right?
Absolutely.
Do you remember that at one point they had two baseball teams in Philadelphia?
I believe it was the Philadelphia Athletics back in the day.
All right, and what is the Athletics logo?
It used to be the A.
Well,
back then it was. I'm not sure what it was back in the Philly era.
Their actual logo is a big white elephant.
Well, the one that they have now, at least the
Oakland. It's always been a big white
elephant. So it did carry over.
Yeah, it's always been a big white elephant. And the reason behind that is a prominent Philadelphia politician at the time was talking about the two baseball teams, and they didn't want to address the big white elephant in the room, which is the fact that the city couldn't hold two baseball teams. And eventually the Athletics went to Kansas City and then on to Oakland. Well, everybody's ignoring the big white elephant in the room, the fact that this has Paul Heyman's fingerprints all over it. And it's a good thing that we're ignoring it, because we want to be surprised. This screams of wrestling fans wanting to ignore things being shoved down our throat and being told what to think, like we are continually with companies like WWE, and wanting to be surprised and letting ourselves get involved in a story once again. Because, let's face it, TNA may not have some of the greatest talent or some of the greatest bookers, but what they've always had for a good while is guys who can tell a great story. And so, now that you get Heyman involved and guys from the original ECW involved, guys who also can tell a great story, it lends itself for fans to being sucked in to being told a great story once again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if it's all Dreamer, he's done a great job. But to me, it screams of having Heyman's fingerprints all over it.
Mace is joining us from down under. Your thoughts on this whole especially this past week. We had mentioned on the Sunday night WrestleTalk radio show, I subbed in for Will, who was unavailable at the time. And one of the main issues that we had mentioned was the audience is digging what's going on. The Impact Zone audience is enjoying what they're seeing. For me as a non-ECW person, it's interesting just to see more or less what's going to happen after the pay-per-view. But first things first, follow up on what Spuggin mentioned. Your feelings as a fan of the product back when it was ECW without WWE's fingers in it, is this Tommy Dreamer 100%, or is Paul on the phone? Like we mentioned, he was on a conference call supposedly with Spike TV. Could he also have been on a conference call with TNA Creative while this is all going on?
I'm pretty much going to throw the same thing as Spug said. You know, if it's Tommy, then, you know, that's brilliant. But it does stink of Paul getting his fingers in the pot, really. It wouldn't surprise me if Tommy has Paul on the phone going, yeah, I've got to do this, this, and this. What do you think about it? You know, it might not be a direct involvement. It might not end up with Heyman being on TNA. But I definitely see him giving Tommy a bit of advice on how to book it, how to do it after all these many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really much else I can add to it that Spug didn't already say.
Well, for me as a fan, That's it. I'm looking at it as a fan. I'm not looking sometimes when I watch the show as a critic or someone. I took this past Thursday night's episode in a straight up fan basis, and they shocked the crap out of me by Hollywood Hogan, or Hulk Hogan, whatever he's legally allowed to be called in TNA, basically walking out, and it almost felt like the Hulkster was going like, yo, brothers, you all can't keep the spotlight. I got to come out and get a little shine off of you by mentioning, you know, while you guys were doing your thing in the 90s, I was doing my thing in the 90s. It was pretty surreal to see, but to mace them back over to Spug, was Hogan's presence really even needed in that whole promo? Could they have just lived without the Immortal Bald Spot walking in here?
I've got a feeling that they didn't really need it, but at the same time, if Hogan wasn't recently in surgery, that segment would have ended a completely different way with EV 2.0, as they're calling him at the moment, beating the absolute crap out of the Immortal Bald Spot. But, you know, it was just one of those moments that made you sit back and go, wow, this is something I never thought I'd see. And again, it's a moment that has people talking about TNA, and that's what this entire thing has had going for it, is that people are talking about TNA. You know, it's as much as people are split about it, you know, a lot of people hate it, people love it, right. They're clashing, it's got radio shows going nuts every week, you know, it's got people sending emails, asking questions, but it's doing exactly what TNA wanted. They want people to talk about TNA, and what are we doing? What have we done for the past 3 weeks? Talk TNA.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm with it.
Yeah. And as we've mentioned, this past week, again, in addition to having all this EV 2.0 chatter, you've had some very entertaining matches. You've had this best of five series with the Motor City Machine Guns and Beer Money is got to be one of the best mini feuds that's been going in 2010 in wrestling overall. And I know that's a big paintbrush that I just used, but you've seen these guys already in a street fight. You've now seen them in a steel cage match. You saw them in – you're apparently going to see them this Thursday night, as we found out on the end of the show, that I'm still trying to imagine this. The Motor City Machine Guns, by winning a steel cage match, have challenged Beer Money to an Ultimate X match. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm entertained by the idea of watching Storm and Rude try to negotiate those two wires, especially if James hasn't done enough curls with the beer bottle. To Spug first, what have you thought of this tag team feud? Is this the best feud you've seen in recent months in TNA?
They did a best of five series a few years ago between AJ Styles and I want to say Christopher Daniels. Not sure, but I remember because that was back on the days when it was on Fox. The Fox Sportsnet show,
yeah.
Yeah, when it was on Fox Sports, they did a best of five series, and that was probably the best series of matches that had been in TNA at that point. And then Angle and Joe had a best of five too. It seems like this is a staple for TNA that every couple of years they take two of the mid-carders and go, eh, there you go, and throw them together. Because at the time when it was AJ, he was a mid-carder. When it was Angle and Joe, they were still mid-carders in TNA. And now you've got Angle or Motor City Machine Guns and Beer Money, and I've seen a couple of matches. They're very good, and it has been a very good feud. I'd hesitate to call it feud of the year, simply because remember back in April there was that match at WrestleMania between Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, and that had to be the feud of the year at this point. I'm sorry, I just but my daughter, in light of the pay-per-view coming up this weekend, my daughter has something to say. You ready? You're a chant with me? You ready?
Uh-oh.
Say ECW, ECW,
ECW.
ECW. Do it again.
ECW.
She's good on night, our buddy. Payroll. She's a producer. We love having her on the show.
All right. Sorry.
One person that we haven't seen in a while, and we'll go to this real quick story before we run down the pay-per-view and the events following it. This came across the wires today that apparently one of my faves, Samoa Joe, is out. This came across from Pro Wrestling Insider that Samoa Joe has reportedly been suspended indefinitely by TNA Wrestling. Apparently the reason for Joe's suspension is, and this is interesting, bad attitude. Now there's also some heat apparently on him for a weight issue. There's also stories that this is kind of retaliation for his feelings on a recent Impact match he had with Jeff Hardy that went the time limit, and he was very vocal in Jeremy Borash doing the countdown. Sir Rockin just pulled this up as well, saying that the Observer is saying he's currently serving a month suspension that is based on his vocally complaining at the tapings about the countdown during the show. Both of you are trained wrestlers and have worked in rings before. For fans that aren't new to the show, both Spug and Mace. Spug wrestles it normally in the Midwestern area. Mace is in Australia. First to Mace, and also the room, if the chat room wants to get involved in here. Is this TNA's kind of way of saying, also, you know what, Joe, we really don't have anything creatively for you, so we're just going to put you out to pasture with Homicide and Shark Boy and all these other guys, and good luck? Or is this something serious, Mace, where they're looking at him going, we want you to drop weight because we don't want you to have any health issues, and heaven forbid, I'm about to say this, have something serious happen to you? Which do you think it is, Mace?
I'd probably go with the one that you didn't mention, which was Samoa Joe getting vocal about the finish of his match basically being broadcast to the audience. You know, something like that would have worked so much better if Borash didn't go, 30 seconds to go, therefore giving away the finish.
But isn't that always done in time limit matches where they say always do that when they go to a time limit draw? Isn't that a staple of the match?
Not always. There are some instances where they don't say it, and when the bell rings, people are wanting more. That's what this match was supposed to do. It was supposed to get us hyped to see it happen again. Preferably on pay-per-view, where TNA can make some money off it. And believe me, I side with Joe where he's being pissed off about it, because according to the reports, he went and said, don't broadcast the finish, just let it happen. And when you do something like that, of course somebody's going to be pissed.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was, you know, it was the management, bookers, whoever the hell decided to tell Borash, okay, broadcast it, then you've got to go with it, unfortunately. And pretty much it's Joe just blew his top, sort of like I did on Sunday night, and he gets punished for it. That's the way the business works.
Your feelings as a competitor, Spug, or have you ever done a Broadway, as it's known in the industry, where they've done that countdown, or are you kind of along the lines of what Mace is saying, you're taking Joe's side in this, and Joe shouldn't be suspended for anything right now?
I'm with Joe, man. And look, I've been in time limit draws, and I've been in Broadways. I've been in a couple, and they're no fun. They're no fun when it gets down to it and you've got 10 seconds left and everybody knows. Everybody in the room, I mean, they're into the match, but they know that they're not going to see a winner. You want the audience wanting more. Always want the audience wanting more. So they come back to the next show. So as Tony Schiavone so intimately put it so many years ago, you put butts in the seats.
Absolutely.
And when when you have things like this happen, and look, I hope Joe gets pissed off to a point where he says something dumb and TNA just outright releases him. Because any use in WWE is more use than he's getting in TNA. And it's a shame. It's a shame that they're wasting a talent like that. And it's a shame that Jeremy Borash doesn't have a mind for the business big enough to go, you know what, even though they told me I should do this, maybe I shouldn't.
And he's been with the company. This isn't like he just walked in and said, hey, I want to be a ring announcer. He's been the ring announcer on and off and has done producing and all kinds of stuff with TNA since day one. So it is a little awkward to have that situation. Also during the show, it was announced that this Monday, apparently they're going to tape what was Hard Justice. And this is very awkward, that during the show, Eric Bischoff announced that the August 12th TNA Impact is going to be nicknamed the whole effing show and will main event with Abyss versus World Heavyweight Champion Rob Van Dam in what basically is being called a Stairway to Janus match, where Janus, the lovely 2x4, which I'm waiting for Eric Young's wardrobe or Orlando Jordan's wardrobe to get wrapped around that thing at some point. It's going to be up above the ring, and we're going to go and get it. Also announced for this show is a contenders match, the phenomenal AJ Styles and his brand new tattoo. If you're a part of the OWW Genesis board, you can go take a look at that very lovely tattoo that he got with his initials and the dates of birth of his three children. Taking on Kurt Angle, Madison Rayne's going to take on Angelina Love. Generation Me, back from wherever they're sitting, going, are we still under contract? Taking on Inc., a three-way dance, Pope D'Angelo De Niro, Mr. Anderson, and Matt Morgan. If Beer Money Incorporated somehow wins the Ultimate X match, there won't be a match of five of the best of five, but if the Guns somehow win this match Thursday night, we'll get match five. And also there's going to be an open challenge from Jeff Hardy, and also the return of TNA Reaction, which is kind of weird because it was only on for one episode. Now, obviously, to the chat room and everyone else that's listening on the Wild Talk Radio Network, this is just really weird because they're basically just, they're openly admitting, going, yeah, okay, that pay-per-view you were going to see Sunday, that doesn't exist anymore. We're going to give it to you on free TV. To Mace, then to Spug, and also in the chat room, if you want to chime in, you can type away on there. Does this bother you as a fan that they're basically doing this pay-per-view on a Thursday night and telling them all, you guys are taking the night off, don't even come to the arena, we're not going to do the WWE one-night stand where the WWE guys sat in the Hammerstein Ballroom and watched it, or are you looking at this as the transition to, okay, we're going to start doing Clash of Champion-type shows?
I figure this is just a one-off.
Okay.
You know, this is pretty much TNA's way of shutting up everybody who has jumped up and down on every radio show around the internet, every blog, every forum that's going, what about the TNA guys? They're missing out on a pay-per-view paycheck, rah, 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 rah. This is TNA's way of going, you know what? We're putting these guys into pay-per-view quality stuff, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're getting a pay-per-view style paycheck with it.
I hope they are.
Yeah, same. Because that's going to shut up everybody who's going to go, oh no, they're missing out. They're not using the guys that came with the company. The same crap we've heard over and over for years every time somebody new comes into the company.
That would have been my argument Sunday night, thank you.
Well, I'm going to say this to you now, Alan. Shut up.
I understand.
Because seriously, people, if you're going to argue the same thing over and over about they're not using the guys who came up with the company to the full potential and rah, 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 that's what Impact and every pay-per-view's done for the past, 7 years? And frankly, yeah, they're bringing in new guys to spike ratings, to get pay-per-view buys, to get people talking. And it's working this time around. So this time, shut up and just enjoy.
Your thoughts, Spug, on this?
I'm kind of in the boat with Mace, and look, as much as Mace has been the ultimate proponent of TNA over the last few years, and I have been the ultimate opponent of TNA. In this simple case, I think it's a one-off. It's doing something, and if it's the introduction of Paul Heyman into the company, it's the right thing to do to showcase his best work. And as we all agree, ECW was his best work. However, I also will say that if you're gonna do a Clash of Champions style pay-per-view, the best thing about Clash of Style Champions pay-per-views were the fact that they were live.
Oh yeah.
Maybe you should do a live show that night instead of taping it, because then people will actually tune in and not find out your spoilers. Just saying.
Yeah, just take a look at Raw this past week. I don't think anybody was really thrilled about it because they already knew what was happening. But that's something we cover later on, right, Alan?
Was Raw taped this week?
Raw was done because half the crew is down
Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. All three shows were taped this week.
I had no idea. No SmackDown tape tonight. They were down in Australia, and I'm not sure where the rest of the... Half the Raw staff was actually here in Florida. They were in Daytona on the 31st.
The other half was in Japan.
Yeah, and Sunday they did a house show down in Fort Myers. So we will be talking WWE later on this evening, but there is a lot of TNA news to cover, so we're going to go ahead and take a quick break here on Cover Tunes Night. If you do have an opinion and you wish to voice it with us, feel free to at 877-588-9877. Choose option one. That is the option for Online World of Wrestling Radio. Mason Spug will stay with us after the break. Sir Rockin will take us out with a cover tune, which most people don't realize this is a cover tune. It's a cover tune from someone named Gloria Jones in the 1960s. You know it as Tainted Love by Soft Cell. We'll be back on All WW Radio.
Nowhere, and I've lost my light, for I toss and turn, I can't sleep at night. Once I ran to you, now I run from you. This tainted love you've given, I give you all a boy could give you. Take my tears, and that's not nearly all. Tainted love.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the indie scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Eric Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling stars today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy.
Christian Cage.
Brett Derry.
Candice LeSalle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
If you run a webcast or have a podcast, audio blog, etc., and you need the occasional liner, sweeper, bumper, or intro, check out VOLiners.com.
VOLiners.com is a free service bringing the internet broadcasting community together. Membership is free, and you can log in anytime.
Simply post your script request and let another community member take it from there. It's that easy. Then come back and check your post and download the completed audio.
It's also a great site to add to your portfolio. Gain practical experience by helping your fellow members out and recording their requests.
Remember, it's 100% free to join and use.
VOLiners.com. Voiceovers, liners, sweepers, and bumpers for your broadcasts. Join today.
A moment you won't forget. Don't miss out. Tweet your friends right on their wall. Spread the word for a can't miss moment.
Yes, I'm glad Rock's recording because this will be probably one of the only times you'll ever hear me say that I was actually impressed by Mr. Anderson tonight. He did very well. They set up the Jeff Hardy splash in the corner thing, and at the last possible second, Anderson gets up, grabs Hardy in a power slam, dropped him down for a quick two count, and I was impressed, sir.
Join Wrestle Talk Radio Sunday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, on the Wild Talk Radio Network at wildtalkradio.com.
Apparently, I get a bad rap for putting Rock down all the time. And well, I guess I should apologize for it. He really is a good guy and does a lot of hard work around here. So Rock, I'm sorry. You are awesome, and I truly mean that. Okay, so how much am I getting paid to say that one? What do you mean this is still recording? Damn. Keep listening to Wild Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio on the Wild Talk Radio Network. We're joined still by two gentlemen that'll be on this Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern, because after we watch Hardcore Justice, The Last Stand, we're going to talk about how great or horrible it was. That would be Mason Spug. Their show is normally on 10 p.m. on Sundays, but as we mentioned, pay-per-view and everything. And, I'm working on the possibility. These guys got on me a few weeks ago when we talked. They talked on their show about the Ultimate Fighting Championships pay-per-views, and I believe there's one this Saturday.
I can't wait.
All of you were like, "You have to watch it, Wes. You got to find a pay-per-view. You got to find a bar or something to watch this crap." And I'm like, "All right, fine." So if I'm able to, it all depends how well my kids go to sleep on Saturday.
Yeah,
I'm using the kids as an excuse. I know, but it's go ahead.
Listen. Anderson Silva's fighting Chael Sonnen. Anderson Silva's undefeated.
Okay.
And Chael Sonnen, the dude packs freight trains for fists. I'm telling you, if you watch any fight on this card, watch this Sonnen Silva fight. It's gonna be awesome.
Now, is there a website, does UFC's website give you like a preview thing like you would see for TNA? Like for this event on Sunday, TNA does a very nice package called Before the Bell, which is on their website, and I believe it's on DirecTV or Dish Network. Does UFC do something like that, or do they not tease their shows like that?
you can go on like UFC.tv, which is their website. I think it's still UFC.tv. It might be UFC.com now. They'll do right. stuff on Spike before the show during the week. And oh, then cool. like on UFC.tv or .com, whatever their website is now, I have it, you know, favorited. Okay. So all I have to do is click on it. But they'll have fighter interviews and stuff like that, and pre-show stuff on the website that you can watch directly there. The cool thing about the UFC pay-per-views is that the advertised card I think the advertised card is like five fights total this pay-per-view. And once that card ends, they'll show two or three more fights that happened at that card that weren't shown live on the air. Okay. They'll show the pre-card fights. So I'm telling you, man, you have to watch it with us.
I'll give it my absolute best effort. I know it's just one of those. I'm not a fan of it, but I'm not a fan of ECW either, but I'm talking about them now. So I guess I'll have to take one for the team, supposedly. Back to this Sunday's event. As mentioned, they haven't announced anything, and we're just speculating. The most likely you're going to see a Tommy Dreamer Raven match. The rumor's been going around that it's Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn. Recently signed to this event, Sabu, Balls Mahoney, Johnny Swinger, Axel Rotten, Too Cold Scorpio was recently added.
Is Spike Dudley still with the company?
I think he's one of those, he comes in whenever he needs to come in. I don't think he's ever been actually future endeavored. I believe he's mentioned for this show.
Can we get a Heat Wave 99 rematch? The Dudley Boys versus Spike Dudley and Balls Mahoney?
Oh, is that where they set him on fire, the table on fire, and put him through? They
oh,
put
yeah.
balls through the table. That thing that's on the ECW.
Bubba was asking for it. Bubba was asking for it on Impact.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, you know, he set someone on fire. I was like, oh, God. That's not a good thing in that building, because one of the pay-per-views during the opening match, which I believe was Eric Young versus Johnny Devine, the pyro went off and the roof caught on fire. So I don't think TNA is not a big fan of that stuff.
Oh, it's just rubbing alcohol.
Oh, of course. But it's still the pyro goes off.
Plus,
you never know what's going to happen.
Plus, it's the Dudleys. They know what they're doing. They've set people on fire plenty of times before.
Look at Ball Mahoney's face.
Exactly. One of the many folks that are not going to be involved in this event is former ECW original and world champion, which is really weird to say he was a world champion, Mikey Ripwreck, has come out and denied that he is going to be at this event. On his official Facebook page, he says the following, quote, "For the record, I have no intentions of doing the TNA pay-per-view. I'm happy for the guys that are doing it, but it's nice to see the little Bingo Hall company everybody blew off back in the day as insignificant is called upon every time business is in the toilet." Ouch. Also, apparently, Nature Boy Ric Flair was offered a match on this show against one of his verbal rivals over the years. That would be the franchise Shane Douglas. Rumor, of course, I can speculate all I want, that he apparently told them, no, I did not want to wrestle Shane Douglas on this event. And as we've always mentioned, Super Crazy Tajiri not available due to bookings in Japan. Stu Carino, Lance Storm, I don't think they've ever been invited, so who cares? Amish Roadkill not there. To the room, which is, well, I don't think Jersey Girls mentioned it there. Anybody that was thinking of Beulah McGillicuddy, who is what we can say it, she's Tommy Dreamer's real life partner. If she was going to be involved in this event, unfortunately, due to a loss in her family, which was her mom passing away, we wish her family and Tommy Dreamer nothing but the best with that situation. She won't be there. Chat room people, we'll give you a couple minutes to catch up here. And if Mason Spug want to take a minute or two and jot a couple ideas down from the names that have been mentioned already, and I'll repeat everybody that's confirmed for this show, shoot off some matches that you want to see. Now, as I said, Tommy Dreamer Raven is already, I'm guessing, a lock, just the way Impact ended with him, Raven attacking Dreamer after his match with Abyss, which was pretty cool to see. Rob Van Dam is supposedly taking on Jerry Lynn. The rest of the roster reads with Stevie Richards, Rhino, supposedly the FBI, Too Cold Scorpio is confirmed, Sabu is confirmed, Sandman's confirmed, Axel Rotten, Spike Dudley, Balls Mahoney, Diamond and Swinger, Team 3D, the Dudley.
Balls Mahoney is no longer there, Alan.
Oh, Balls is out? Okay, no more Balls. Damn, no Balls for anybody. Al Snow is supposedly here, so let's move Balls, put the Balls back in the drawer. He's out. All right, no Balls. Feel shame that there's no Balls, but hey, there's other ways to get the Balls out later on in the evening.
I don't, if you have the Dudleys there, I don't know who you're gonna tag team them against, unless you throw somebody together.
Well, they've done that before, haven't they? You just mentioned Balls and Spike Dudley were mixed together. So.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. That was an actual tag team at the time.
Okay.
Balls Mahoney and Spike Dudley were an actual tag team at the time. because Axel Rotten was out hurt, and so Balls needed a replacement, so he had Spike Dudley, and they tagged for a while. They were even tag champs. They won the tag championships at Heatwave 99 in Dayton. If the Dudleys are there and Balls Mahoning is out, I don't know who you're going to have. You know, if Axel Rotten is confirmed, but Balls Mahoning is out, you're not going to have the hardcore chair swinging freaks there, so I don't know who you're going to have go up against the Dudleys, unless and if I'm correct, Stevie Richards is still with TNA.
Yeah, he's been doing all the stuff. He was Dr. Stevie, so
it's quite possible. It's quite possible that you could have Stevie Richards and have BWO show up, and you could have the BWO take on the Dudleys. That I'd like to see.
Oh, wow. Well, is Meanie still wrestling? I know Nova Magbuchi on and off does wrestling. I haven't seen anything from the Meanie lately, other than he was on the Hardcore Homecoming DVD that Jeremy Borash put together a while back. A couple of folks in the chat room, Jersey Girl says she would like to see Sandman versus the War Machine Rhino. Knowing that, unfortunately, Taz is not most likely going to be a part of this event, she had wanted to see the Dudleys versus Sabu. Another user in the room, Lucky Star 2010, wants to see Sabu versus Rhino. Jersey Girl's also saying they could always have Mick Foley and Al Snow versus the Dudleys. This is a spoiler-free zone, so we can't mention Mick's role, if he has any, in the show. You're the one that is, I know from listening to you eloquently speak on Sunday night and killing every other radio show in the business for their view on this event. If you're Tommy Dreamer and you already know you've got Raven versus Dreamer and Jerry Lynn versus RVD Mace, give us a couple other matches that you might want to see that either A, you were a big fan of, or B, that you wish ECW Paul Heyman version would have done and never got around to booking.
Well, number one, I'd throw Too Cold Scorpio and Sabu in some sort of either let's destroy each other with tables and chairs or barbed wire style match. As for Team 3D, I know Rock suggested this in our little chat, but Simon Diamond and Johnny Swinger, team them up and put them against the Dudleys.
Did they ever work each other? I know that were Diamond and Swinger together after they left to go to WWF, the Dudleys?
I'm not sure if they were a tag team, but it sounds familiar, but it's
just seems to be
Simon
the
Diamond
two you
Johnny
put together.
Were a tag team.
Yeah, I'm, but I mean, were they a unit together when the Dudleys were still under ECW's house, or did they start teaming in 2000 after
I think they were right at the tail end. They were together when the Dudleys were in ECW, but it was right as the Dudleys were leaving.
Gotcha. Lucky Star 2010 is also chiming in, and she'd like to see Al Snow versus Too Cold Scorpio. I know Too Cold Scorpio had been involved in the Deep South Wrestling WWE developmental for a while. One of our recent guests, Francisco Chiazzo, who was working under another name at the time in Deep South Wrestling when he was training there, worked him and saw some footage, and he was in pretty good shape. That's one of the things I guess some of the fans are a little worried about is some of these guys may have not, you know, just realized, okay, crap, I got a couple weeks to get ready for this show. How much weight can I lose? So I'm interested to see just some of these matchups because only from the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD and the Hardcore Homecoming DVD have I any knowledge of some of the great feuds in that promotion. Now, obviously, Tommy Dreamer Raven was one of the long, I believe it was one of the longest running feuds for years in that company. And you also had Dreamer and Sandman involved. I wonder, is Tyler Fullington busy? Can we have him show up at this event?
Isn't he wrestling now?
I thought I read a rumor on that effect that he's out there in the business.
He wrestled Raven on some indie event, if I remember correctly. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I do remember reading something about Tyler actually wrestling Raven on some sort of indie card somewhere. But just while we're still going through what we'd like to see, and this one will take a slight bit of explanation. I'd like to see Mick Foley versus Al Snow. And if Mick Foley loses, he has to give up publishing rights and all money made from his next book to Al Snow.
I like that.
Because anybody who has read the Mick Foley books knows that he takes pot shot after pot shot after pot shot at Al Snow in those books. And
that's
I just want to see him face off. Yeah, definitely. Hell, even have a Foley book on a pole match or something. Put him in a ladder match and have one of Mick Foley's books hanging above the ring.
He supposedly has another one coming that I'm not sure if it's being published by TNA or it's Bumble. I know he's got another one in the works, just like Chris Jericho's got another one in the works. The chat room's been really active, and we appreciate them for joining us here. You can chime in at 877-588-9877. Hit option 1 on your keypad, or if you're a Skype user, you can Skype Sir Rockin. The chat room, if you're listening on another podcasting setup, is wildtalkradio.com, and then hit chat. You can also listen through owradio.com, which is our home site. We're appreciative that you are joining us here tonight. This event, the main issue that I've had, and I brought it up on Sunday with these guys, is, yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be a one-off event. And, yes, this is the fourth farewell of this promotion where you had ECW one-night stand or whatever it was called in 2005, which we kind of outlined when Rob Conway was our guest. Because he was a part of the beer drinking that was going on that upper level with Bradshaw and the rest of the crew. And then you had the 2006 event, which was the eventual launch of ECW WWE TV. Plus you had the Shane Douglas-led Hardcore Homecoming event. Is this, we've heard week after week after week, what's Dixie's surprise? I hinted at it a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to bring it up again. Could the surprise possibly be keeping all of these ECW guys under roster and creating a second show specifically for ECW and letting Tommy have 100% creative control? Or is it, I got like a dartboard. I feel like the detective in The Dark Knight going, when you're like, you're the detective on the Batman kit. Yeah, we have several suspects and leads, and there's like Elvis and somebody else up on the board. I'm tired of throwing darts at the board here, Dixie Carter and Jeff Jarrett. Just get the surprise out there already. Oh,
if NDAs are coming into the equation.
Yeah.
If you have non-disclosure agreements coming into the equation, that means one thing and one thing only. You just shipped off Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, and Hulk Hogan down the river because somebody better came along.
Yeah, not to mention the whole second show by Tommy Dreamer can sort of be put to rest as well, because they've recently announced that TNA Reaction is going to be a second show with, I think it's with Spike. I saw something this morning about it.
It's right after. If you go by what they're saying, that it's going to be right after Impact, and when they did this in April, I believe, March, April, it was basically a recap show of the previous week's Impact, done with the high-def cameras that they were using for backstage segments and interviews. Could be a setup to a test bunny to see if an ECW TV show would work. I mean, it's obvious. I believe the point was brought up by one of you gentlemen, or it might have been Omega, that this past few weeks have actually seen TNA's ratings go up, which is a nice thing to see. And believe me, I know Mace was saying that every radio show out there that's got a microphone is bashing the crap out of this event. I am, but I'm not. And the reason I'm not is because it's getting people work. And that's what, as a fan of the business, I'm all about. I want to see competition between promotions, which gets the creative juices rolling. So if all these guys stick around, great. I don't know if it's going to be the launch of another show or not. Before we go to break, to Spug, could you see if this pay-per-view does really good numbers? And we've always speculated it's 8,000, it's 10,000. What, in your mind, would be a great pay-per-view number for this show? Is 15, 30, what's the big number? I mean, obviously, when WWE did this thing a few years ago, it was in the 300s of thousands, so... Give us a number. What are you picking?
What this pay-per-view is going to do?
Yeah, what is your hopes that the pay-per-view does?
I'd be impressed if it did 30,000. If it got bought by 30,000 homes, I'd be impressed. Because, first of all, not many people watch TNA. Not many people watch TNA. And second of all, I don't know the numbers on TNA's buy rates for their pay-per-views, but I'm assuming that not many people buy TNA's pay-per-views either. So with being attached to ECW, if this thing did 25 to 30,000 buys, I'd be impressed.
Give us a number, Mace. What is your goal? If you're Dreamer and Dixie and Jeff sitting there, what's your break-even number? Is it as high as what Spug is saying, or are you, like, really shooting, going, we're going to do the biggest number in TNA pay-per-view history this Sunday?
Give me 15,000 to 20,000. Give me double of what they're doing now. You know, if you can double your audience from this one pay-per-view and they're willing to stick around to see what happens next, then that is a win for TNA. Hell, even if they do one buy rate better, that's still better than what they've done in the past.
All right, on that note, we're going to take another time out here on Cover Tunes Night. I was trying to come up with a more clever name for it, but Cover Tunes just works. Believe it or not, most people will be thinking that, oh, this ain't a cover tune. Yeah, it is. It was done in the 60s by a group called Brownsville Station. You know them. Doing the remake, they've done a couple other remakes back in the day. The Crew taking us out. Hopefully after the break, Marco Corleone of Lucha Libre USA will be joining us. If not, we'll continue to roll on with Online World of Wrestling Radio until he does arrive from his stay in Los Angeles. So take us out there, Vince Neil.
Smoking in the boys' room. Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official eFed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
So every day I get all these emails here at CindySin.com. Let me read you the latest one I got. Dear Cindy, Cindy, I just wanted to say you are such an awesome person. And wait, Rock, didn't I tell you to stop emailing me? Oh, this isn't from Rock. This is from someone named Steve. Anyway, if you have any questions about dating, relationships, or sex, email me today by going to my website, CindySin.com.
Since 1996, Audio Wrestling has been getting in the ring as your definitive source for all your wrestling desires.
Interviews with some of pro wrestling's biggest stars.
Providing you with a wide selection of award-winning wrestling shows from past and present, such as
Ministry of Slam,
Monday Night Mayhem,
In Your Head,
WrestleCast,
Sunday Night Showdown,
Wrestling News Live,
Between the Ropes,
RVD Radio,
WrestleCast,
and Wrestle Talk Radio,
and many others.
If you can't get enough Mad Mania, climb into the ring with
Audio Wrestling.
www.audiowrestling.com.
And check out all the real voices of wrestling radio.
Audio Wrestling.
Keeping you tuned in.
Since 1996.
Do you have a certain passion? Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or Anything Goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talk We Talk Live, all you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Hey everyone, this is the original voice of wrestling, Tim Stein. Catch me talking sense about the WWE, TNA, and the rest on the real voice of professional wrestling talk. Wrestle Talk Radio, Sunday nights, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Voice of the gentleman known as Los Lobos, covering the late, great Richie Valens, who unfortunately never really got a great career thanks to a little coin flip in a cornfield in Iowa. The phone numbers tonight, as always, is 877-588-9877. This is the second hour of Online World of Wrestling Radio, and because we're Online World of Wrestling Radio, when you get to the prompt, you hit number one. If you're a Skype user, get with Sir Rockin' right now, because we have a gentleman on the air. In a moment or two, we'll give you some quick background on who he is. You may have, he's also the reason why we're doing a cover tunes night, because in his career, he worked for WCW towards the end of it, had a great run with World Wrestling Entertainment, and for about the past 4 or 5 years has been tearing up Mexican wrestling. He is one of the most popular stars in that country. Yet he is an American, which is very rare, and we'll get into that with him tonight. He is appearing this weekend in Las Vegas, and we'll talk about that event. If you have been watching the last couple weeks on MTV2 and MTV3, which is their Spanish language channel, you know this gentleman. He is formerly known as Mark Jindrak in the United States, but to the Mexican population, he is Marco Corleone. Welcome to All My World of Wrestling Radio, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Thank you very
much. All right. We will be joined also for this interview by Mace and Spug, which is spelled S-P-U-G, or as Tatanka rechristened him, Smug. They'll be sticking around for this interview, and you can definitely get on the line with us, folks. The first question out of the gate I want to ask is, this, it's been 3 weeks of TV itself, but these events have been taped months in advance. Being at these events, what is your overall impression that the live crowds have been feeling? Are they enjoying what they're seeing, or are they kind of confused because they've had the six-sided ring at one event, and then this past week, thanks to RJ Brewer, we've got a four-sided ring? So first, take us through just the initial events that you've been a part of.
Well, you know, like any upstart company, it's difficult, you know, at first because, number one, the population of the United States, they really don't know Lucha Libre, really. You know, they know like Nacho Libre, the movie they saw, or, you know, they don't really know Lucha Libre. So besides, you know, we draw good, the Latino crowd, like the Mexicans, and in Springfield, one of our tapings, we had a lot of Puerto Ricans, but, you know, we're still educating the American people, the casual American fan, what exactly is Lucha Libre, because it's very, very different from a TNA or a WWE. You know, and about the six-sided, most of the time we're going to have a six-sided ring. For that instance, we're in Springfield, Massachusetts, and we did a taping there, and because of RJ Brewer, you're right, we used the four-sided ring. But most of the time you're going to see the six-sided ring. That's more customary to the rings in Mexico, six-sided usually, as a TNA ring used to be.
Now, for fans that don't watch Lucha Libre, like myself, I'm only into it recently because of this event, explain to them when they're hearing on the air, they're hearing Niall Sherrod and Lalo Gonzalez refer to the talent as technicos and rudos. Explain to the American audience what exactly a technico or rudos, what are they? And which one are you currently?
Basically, the technico is another word for the baby face or the good guy, and the rudo is the heel or the bad guy. And they just call him Technico Rudo, and I am a technico, you know, and it's crazy because it's the Mexican Lucha Libre is, like I said, is much different than the style of America, TNA and WWE, but you know, it's as far as Technico Rudo goes, nothing more than just babyface or heel, really.
He is Marco Corleone, also known in America as Mark Jindrak, which we're going to start addressing your previous career in America, and then we'll transition back to the Lucha Libre stuff. What was it in your background and college and everything that one day led you to the WCW Power Plant? And I'm sure you've been asked this tons of times, but take us through the Sarge and all that craziness that you had to go through just to be a part of the place, let alone a typical day in the place, because Bill Goldberg has talked about it being the most horrible, worse than any NFL training camp or college training camp he was a part of. How horrible was this thing?
Oh, it was, I mean, it was a real deal. And, I can remember my tryout. I tried out in October of 1998. Where basically it's a 3-day trial. You go down to the power plant, which was in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, I was living in Orlando, Florida at the time. I was playing basketball at a school in New York, a small Division II school. And a couple of my friends moved down to Orlando for the summer. I decided to come. And if you remember, WCW used to do the taping in Universal Studios. So I met two wrestlers, Alex Wright and another guy named by the name of Barry Houston. And basically, they sponsored me to go try out. And I went to Atlanta in October 98, and I tried out. And it just tells me anything. I mean, I went with, like, I tried out with 25 guys. And day two, there was me and one other guy left. So two guys left. You know, it was just tons of squats, tons of running. It's more of a mental thing. You know, first they tire you physically and make you suffer physically. And then once you feel like you can't go anymore, your kind of mind goes. You know, you get mental. Your mind's just going in, and they play mental games with you, like, you know, Sarge would be all over us, you know, calling us pukes, and you guys aren't athletes, and this and that, and, you know, that's how they weeded out the soft, the weak ones, you know, and, luckily I had made it, you know, I came in well prepared and conditioned, and, you know, and never, you know, here I am ever since, you know, I've been wrestling, and thank God I went to that trial, you know, but physically it's incredible. I mean, I can remember, so many stories, like, guys who just came there, guys like Bob Sapp. I remember Bob Sapp's first day there. He did so many squats that he ended up getting sick, and he threw up. And when he threw up in front of himself. And after he threw up, he kind of slipped in his puke and landed all in his puke and stuff. And that was a very normal occurrence for guys, you know, to be doing squats, like 500 of them, and just tossing their cookies and throwing up, you know. That's the kind of camp it was. And it never stopped. Just because you were in the door didn't mean anything. Every day, this was an everyday thing. In fact, it got worse. You know, then we got, you know, Paul Orndorff was our trainer for a while, and he's, obviously a well physically conditioned guy and always has been. You know, we had 3 to 4 hours every day of that stuff, you know, calisthenics and physicalness. And, you know, I appreciated it at the time because, you know, when we did get our call from WCW, when Vince Russo gave us that chance, you know, all the natural born thrillers were the guys from the power plant, basically. We were ready. I mean, maybe we were green, and, you know, and we were just thrown out there to the wolves early, but at the very least, we were in very, very great shape, you know, so, and that helps, you know, that's half of it. So, it's no joke, basically, in a nutshell, it's no joke. It was no joke.
Yes. You basically just touched on it then with your time in the power plant of exercise. Spug and myself are independent wrestlers. He's in the Ohio area. I'm down here in Australia. But I'm just wondering, if you had advice for anybody wanting to break into the wrestling business, what type of fitness level should they be before they even look at going to a school?
Well, you know, I don't know what kind of schools are out there now. You know, I think the power plant, they really pride themselves on that kind of conditioning, you know? And I would think that there isn't anything like that out there anymore. But to me, I mean, thank you for the, you know, the experience was great and stuff, but I don't think all that stuff is really needed. I think what's needed is nowadays is flexibility. You know, steroids and stuff are a big issue in wrestling today, and you know, I think basically flexibility is good, a good diet, and basically free from all types of steroids. And, you know, the world of wrestling is changing, and I'm kind of happy after the Chris Benoit thing, you know, and a lot of those rules implemented by WWE. I think it's good for wrestling because it's just, that's the main thing, you know, your body, you have one body, and that stuff does hurt your body over a long time period of time. And if, you know, if everybody's doing it and stuff, and you want to keep up with the Joneses, to keep up with the others, it's just difficult for the sport. And, you know, now I think it's, the conditioning has to be there, obviously, but what is most important is flexibility, just a well-balanced diet, and a lot of stretching, and just, you know, basically learning how to work, you know. The WWE, TNA, and us, you know, we're looking for guys that are, you know, they can work, and basically, you know, the whole meathead, you know, steroid juiced up guys are, that look is out, you know, and it's more about flexibility and duration, you know. You're no good if you're tearing a muscle every 5 weeks, you know. So, that's why, for now, as far as training schools go, I don't know what's out there, but, I think the most important thing is getting into a good school where there's good trainers. You know, like when I was in OVW for a while in WWE, you know, a school like that's awesome. You know, you come in, you do a little calisthenics, you do some training, you do some stretching, but you learn how to work, you know, and I can't stress enough for, you know, psychology and wrestling and just being flexible and not very injury prone. And that's what I think is needed nowadays.
Thank you very
much. He is Mark Corleone. The number is 877-588-9877. You can go to LuchaLibreUSA.com to check out their event this coming weekend at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas. You had mentioned being a part of the WCW Power Plant, and you were there with some pretty heavy-hitting guys that became the Natural Born Thrillers, such as Johnny Stamboli, Sean Stasiak, Chuck Palumbo, Mike Sanders. Was it a situation where they would bring you guys, kind of like how the Tough Enough kids did it, or the way the Florida Championship Wrestling people are trained? Did you guys actually go to live events like a Nitro or a Thunder and set up Takedown the Ring, or were you guys totally isolated from the main roster?
Well, in WCW, I can remember... luckily for me, is maybe after like maybe 3 or 4 months into the Power Plant school, obviously at this time WCW had Monday Night Nitro and they had Thunder the following night. They taped Thunder the following night. Well, I can remember correctly, myself and Helix Skipper and one other guy, we got called to the WCW from the WCW office to come and do like TV security, you know, the stuff you see on TV, security guys, just to be around the business. And you know, luckily for me, I had that opportunity. So, you know, early in the business, into my career, while I was still training in the school, every Monday and Tuesday, I had a chance to be around all the guys from Nitro and Thunder. So, you know, for me, it was always hands on. I could see how the guys trained. I mean, it was awesome because before I joined the Power Plant, I mean, I remember as a kid watching like the Macho Man and Hulk Hogan and, you know, Kevin Nash. And now I'm right there, you know, 4 months into the school, being able to do, you know, some skits and some backstage scenes with guys of that caliber, you know. I thought it was great. I mean, I remember one pre-tape, Hulk Hogan hit me with a garbage can, you know. I thought that was the greatest part of my life, you know, watching him as my idol as a kid, and now he's hitting me with a garbage can, you know, and stuff like that. So I got to be around it. Not to mention we were right at ringside doing TV security, so I got to see, you know, the matches live, right, you know, live and direct right there, you know, in the front row. So, you know, for me it was good. But for the others, mostly they stayed at home at the school there and just trained every day. And, but whenever they shot shows like, next to Georgia, Atlanta, like, you know, like Gainesville, Georgia, or Rome, Georgia, or even at the Phillips Arena there, we'd go down as a group and come and be around and stuff. But for me, I got a little added bonus by being able to go that early in my career and participate in, you know, in ring security and TV security and stuff like that, you know, so I was lucky.
One of our chat room listeners, I'm sorry to cut you off, I want to get this out real fast because she's been waiting patiently. One of our chat room listeners, Jersey Girl, wanted to know, what opponent in both WCW and WWE did you enjoy facing, and who was the easiest to work with? I know that's probably putting about 5-6 people on your plate right in front of you, but if you could answer that one for her, we'd appreciate it.
Well, I worked, you know, in WCW, I was in a tag team the whole time, basically, with Sean O'Hare. So we worked, the guys who worked the most in the tag team division was Juventud Guerrero and Rey Mysterio, Disco Inferno, Billy Kidman a lot, Alex Wright, who else? Chronic, we're working Brian Adams and, I forget the other guy's name, the tag team Chronic. We worked with Hugh Morris a lot, Elix Skipper, but basically tag teams. So any of the tag teams at the time, like the Filthy Animals, like a Billy Kidman, Hugh Morris, those guys were cool to work with, and I enjoyed working them because the matches were always pretty fun, you know. Straight out of school there, we had a fast-paced style, and, you know, that's more my style. And I guess the easiest to work with is, you know, there's a ton of them, but I'd say the easiest to work with would probably be, I worked one time Sting in Australia. Him and Booker T, we worked myself and Sean O'Hare, and I remember Sting being, you know, guys like Sting or Kevin Nash or DDP, they had a way of making me feel calm in the ring, you know, so I guess the easiest ones to work with are guys like that because they had a sense of control in the match. And they made you feel comfortable, you know. You gotta understand. I mean, pretty much, we went from the power plant straight to TV, so you know it's nerve wracking. But number one, we got to be with all the other, you know, all of the friends from the power plant. So it was like kind of going to school with your friends for the first day of school, you know. It was great. And then, you know, secondly, getting able to work with these guys, you know, like the Kevin Nashes, the DDPs, the Rey Mysterios, you know, the guys like that. They're super calm and super professional and. In any match with those guys, the night off.
Now you worked in WCW and WWE at a time where wrestling was both cherished and then made an absolute joke in this country. What is it like to work in that time frame and then go to a country where wrestling is not only cherished but it is tradition? It is a tradition and it is honored throughout generations of fans and wrestlers there. I mean, what is it like the two dichotomies and personalities of the countries?
Oh, well, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing, you know. That's why I fell in love with the Lucha Libre. I mean, you know, to some extent, you know, I'm not gonna cry and moan or complain about my career in the States. I mean, of course, I had a few years in WCW. They shut down. I went immediately to WWE, and I was there for like maybe 4.5-5 years and got a release. But that was the thing. You know, the whole time, like, I not so much anymore. My knees are going a little bit, but I'm still, you know, still do a ton of stuff. But, you know, back in the day, I mean, I saw myself as being almost a world-class athlete. I mean, my vertical leap was over 40 inches. I mean, I ran like a 4.640-yard dash. I put myself against a lot of the linebackers in the NFL, you know, as far as athleticism goes. And the problem was, you know, like you said, like, some people in America take it as a joke, you know. I mean, we have baseball, football, basketball, hockey, soccer, golf, NASCAR. I mean, it goes on and on and on for sports. And wrestling's kind of like, you know, I remember I'd tell people, like, oh, well, you know, you're a big guy. What do you do? I'm a professional wrestler. They kind of take you as, like, you're a clown, you know? But meanwhile, like, you know, I could go. I mean, I could go. Athletically speaking, I was, from my age, 25, 26 years old, I mean, I was fresh. I ran fast. I jumped high, you know, a world-class athlete. And never got respected for it. But then immediately when I left WWE, had a chance to perform in Mexico, what a difference, you know? Like, this, you went from being in just like a cult following or a fad, like wrestling, in the States, to a culture. Like, you come into a culture. We're talking like Santo and Blue Demon, the history of the masks. You know, here in Mexico, we only have soccer. That's the number one sport here in Mexico, and Lucha Libre. So, I mean, for me, it was the change was astronomical. I mean, I got so popular so quick here because, you know, most of the Americans that come here, our style, let's face it, our style is more kind of ground and pound. You know, you get a lot of big guys and they do a lot of power moves, and very, it's kind of strong style, you know. But in Mexico, it's, you know, very acrobatic and high-flying. So when I came here, I upped my athleticism and my acrobatic style. And the fact that I don't wear a mask. I'm 6 foot six, I have blonde hair, and I don't wear a mask. 85% of the wrestlers do here, you know, in a number two sport. I mean, so right away, I got over and got very popular very quick. And, you know, that right there, the whole difference how they treat the wrestlers in each respective country is so different. I'll tell you another thing, too. You know, nothing against the crowds in America, but, you know, sometimes I remember being in WWE where, you know, it's almost like sometimes the crowds were cold. Sometimes you had to almost have a ladder match for people for cheer, you know, like kind of like cold crowds, you know. But in Mexico, I mean, I remember my first match in Mexico was a Grand Prix in CMLL, and, I mean, there was 12,000 people there. But 12,000 people, a crowd, sounds like 25,000 people. These people, they love Lucha Libre. I mean, it's their culture. You know, a picture of Jesus Christ, you know, on their nightstand is right along with a picture of El Santo. You know, it's their culture. You know, it's Lucha Libre is one of the oldest forms of professional wrestling, if not the oldest. And, you know, that's a huge, huge difference. It's almost incredible, you know, to see the difference. So right now, WWE here in Mexico is just blowing up. It's incredible the amount of fan support here for WWE in Mexico. They entered TV about a year and a half ago. They got TV deals here with Televisa and TV Azteca, the major stations in Mexico, and the ratings are ridiculous. It just goes to show you that the people, they love their wrestling, you know? If a guy like John Cena or Randy Orton lived here, these guys would be, you know, some of the most popular guys in this whole country.
Well, you know? as someone who has wrestled not only in the States but in Mexico and abroad, if there's an independent wrestler who gets the opportunity to go abroad, to say Mexico, Japan, places like that, would it be safe to say that you would tell them to take it, to experience these other places, so they can appreciate the business more and what it is, and not just what they've seen in the States?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because, you know, here, I mean, it's always great just to get out and see something else, you know? I mean, in your life, if you have the opportunity to do it. I kind of was forced to do it because I was a professional wrestler, and really, after WWE, TNA at that time wasn't really popping, and, you know, I went to Mexico, and it was great. But just as for an educational experience for your career, of course, you know, there's a whole different style. You know, they wrestle different here, and it really, you know, in American wrestling, there's baby faces and heels, and of course, like I said, I compared it to Technicos and Rudos here in Mexico, but it's more so... You know, the crowds are very mixed, you know, it's usually 50%, 50%, 50% Rudo, 50% technical. So just coming here and learning how to get over and how to adapt to the people, and, you know, especially as a foreigner. For myself, I mean, it was very, very foreign to me at first. I mean, a whole different type of style, Lucha Libre is completely different. So, you know, I came here and really, really broadened my career and broadened my skills because you have to. You know, here the people, you know, they're very, very active and very, very involved with the wrestling. If they buy a ticket, you can sure bet that they're going to participate. And, you know, it teaches you, number one. I mean, me, I learned a different language, Spanish. I made a lot of contacts and learned a different style here in Mexico. So I have that for the rest of my life, for the rest of my career. So for anyone who has a chance, yeah, of course, here, Japan, wherever. England, wherever you can go to get another education or another option, another look of what's out there in the world of wrestling, I applaud it.
I have one more quick follow-up. I'm sorry. Would you say that the fans abroad are more educated on the product than they are in the United States?
You know, I don't educated by, you know, well...
You talk to a kid in the United States, and he knows who John Cena, Randy Orton are, and he knows what he's read on the internet about them. But you talk to somebody in Tijuana,
and you ask them about El Santo, they can tell you what El Santo ate for breakfast the day he passed. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. They're more idols, you know, like that's the whole thing. You know, in the United States growing up, our Ken Griffey Jr. is like a Santo Jr., you know, for them. It's they're idols. I mean, the soccer players here, you know, they're kind of small. They're not very, you know, soccer players are kind of skinny and small, you know, not very physically opposing. But the wrestlers, I mean, those are their idols. And that's what I'm telling you. Like, I'll be honest with you now. I've seen a big shift in the past year and a half with the entrance of United States television, United States wrestling, the WWE. Here in Mexico, it's incredible. If I can kind of explain, give you an example, like maybe 6 months ago, I did an interview at a school. It was kind of a cute little interview where I sat in the middle of like 200 kids, and basically they gave Marco Corleone a questionnaire, like an interview. And every single question was about some part of WWE. You know John Cena. You wrestled Undertaker. You friends with Randy Orton. You know, what do you think of so-and-so? Rey Mysterio. What do you think of... And really nothing to do with... they really didn't care about what was going on in Mexico, you know? They didn't care about a Marco Corleone or a Cibernético or a Santo. It's crazy. I mean, the gap, it's changing. WWE has exploded here, and they're here to stay. I mean, the people love the WWE here, you know, more so than CMLL or AAA. But that's a big difference, you know? Guys are idols here. Wrestlers are idols to them, you know, whereas... You know, in the States, you read stuff on the internet and stuff, and you hear little gossip. Here, people just like who they like, and they know everything about them, their history, because they look up to them. You know, they follow them in the newspapers. You know, our results are in the newspaper every day. You know, you wrestle on a Saturday, and Sunday morning, you can check the Sunday newspaper and just see pictures and, you know, what went on in the world of wrestling here in this country. And that's, you know, imagine that. Imagine picking up the USA Today paper and seeing, you know, Hulk Hogan beating Shawn Michaels or something. You know, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't, because people take it as like a form of entertainment now, as like a fad, a cult, something to read about on the internet, you know, something to come to when Raw or SmackDown comes to town or TNA comes to town. It's here in Mexico, it's more, they live, breathe, sleep, eat wrestling because it's their culture. And that's a big difference.
Now, you did say that anybody who gets a chance to should go to like Mexico or Japan or go overseas, get out of your own country and see what the rest of the world has to offer. But with that would bring the whole language barrier thing into question. I know you've said before we brought you on the air that you've become very, well, pretty fluent in Spanish since you've been in Mexico. Do you think that actually going out, hitting a school course of some sort in Spanish or Japanese before you head over these countries would be a really good idea? Or when you actually get in the ring with your opponents, are there ways that you're able to bridge that language gap?
Well, you know, I think, I mean, it wouldn't hurt, of course. You know, I never think it would hurt to have a little Spanish or Japanese, whatever, under your belt, just to get around while you're not wrestling. But I think nowadays the language of wrestling is pretty universal. You know, I didn't find it difficult working with guys that spoke a different language before. It's kind of, you know, if you know how to wrestle, you've been trained, it's kind of a universal thing, you know? I mean, the influence of TV in the world now, I mean, there's been so many Japanese people come to Mexico, a lot of Mexicans that come to TNA, a lot of Mexicans, you know, that wrestle in WWE. It's pretty much a big mix now, you know. It's kind of a collage. The wrestling world is very universal, and but as far as going to the countries in general, I think having a basic grasp of the language just for your own necessities in the street, ordering food or whatever, is very important. I can remember I went to when I worked in New Japan a few months. I remember being in some, you know, Tokyo wasn't bad because, you know, of course, big cities like that are very Americanized, but I can remember going to some very small villages and stuff in Japan, and, you know, people don't understand anything, no English, nothing, so, I mean, it can be very difficult. So I'd say you get an education for your time when you're not wrestling, but, you know, wrestling is so universal nowadays.
You had brought up your athletic prowess, and I
believe Jim Barcelona of the Miami Herald when he interviewed you, and he's a contributor on this show, and he's the one who said you have to ask him about this. Is it true that you challenged or you challenged Randy Orton and Shane McMahon at an event, to a pre-event somewhere at a building, to a test of vertical leaping? Is this true?
No, actually what happened, you know, like that was my whole thing, you know, jumping was my big ability, you know, and obviously in my career, I threw a lot of drop kicks. I used to do a super drop kick where like guys like a Matt Morgan would hold a guy up in Japan and by his knees pretty much. So the guy would be sitting, you know, his chest would be maybe a foot over Matt Morgan's head or a foot and a half over Matt Morgan's head, and I would drop kick him, you know. I call it the super drop kick, and I do it here as well. So I've always been a great jumper, a great leaper. I would do 360 dunks, reverse dunks, tomahawk, power dunks. So it was kind of a known fact. And Randy Orton was my best friend in WWE when I was there. And, you know, Shane McMahon is a cool guy. He hangs out with the guys, you know. You know, Vince McMahon's the boss, and he's very businesslike. But, you know, usually Shane McMahon cuts it up backstage and stuff. And I remember one day they're just joking around, and they're jumping up and touching something, you know, like a basketball rim or something from the Staples Center, and they're just jumping up and touching it. And they saw me walking down the hall, so they were joking around. They said, "Can you touch this?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." I went up and I jumped up and I touched something, and it was pretty high, but it was, you know, maybe 10 foot something. So we saw something on the ceiling. I looked at something on the ceiling, and I said, "Man, I bet you I can touch that." And it looked super, super high. And they said, "No way. There's no way you can touch that." So of course I tried. At that point in time, like I said, I was 24, 25 years old. My legs were fresh, super fresh, and, you know, that was my ability, you know, and I think that's important, you know, to show off your abilities in WWE, because you never know who's watching or how that can attribute to or help you, that novelty in your wrestling game. Look at John Cena. John Cena started rapping because one time on a bus tour in England, a tour, he was rapping on the freestyling on the bus for 2 hours, and Stephanie McMahon heard him, you know. So anytime you can apply yourself or do something that phenomenal, do it, you know. And so I saw this whole thing, and at the time, you know, people were coming in out of the catering room, and, you know, so before you know it, the whole gathering came. Like, Vince McMahon was there, Stephanie McMahon, Shane McMahon, Triple H, Randy, a bunch of guys, probably 20 guys, 25 guys gathered around, and I stretched out a little bit. And I jumped up and touched this rod, you know, just this random rod hanging down from the ceiling. And it looked so super high, but the first time I jumped up, I barely nicked it. I almost made it. Like, I was probably like maybe a half inch away. So people were like, "Wow," you know, just the fact that I came that close was incredible. So I tried it again, and the second try, I jumped up and I grabbed it. I touched it. And Shane McMahon went to, you know, the work crew and stuff, and he grabbed a tape measure, and he measured it, and it was 12 feet 2 inches. And,
whoa.
You know, that was, yeah, so. Actually, you know, that's been my thing, jumping. Actually, when I got released from WWE in 2005, I played, not many people know this, I played two games. I went on tour with the And1 mixtape tour. You know, you see on ESPN all the time, you got those real
tricks. Oh, yeah.
The Professor, the Air up there, and those little gimmicks. Basically, it's basketball mixed in with wrestling gimmicks. And so when they came to Atlanta, it was kind of weird. It was kind of surreal because they came to Atlanta, and we were outside the Gwinnett Center, one of the WWE wrestlers. And I remember maybe 5 months previously, it was me and Kurt Angle versus Big Show in a pay-per-view. And then I got released in July, and then at the end of July, I was right there again outside of Gwinnett Civic Center. Because the N1 mixtape tour, they have all these guys try out. And that day, 600 guys tried out. And they also have a slam dunk contest. And basically, the object is to get inside the building and play. Well, I won the slam dunk contest in the N1 mixtape tour. And I played actually for 2 games with the tour. So, you know, I can't say I played Division II basketball. I'm not, you know, by any means, I'm not LeBron James or anything. But, I mean, I did very well showing off my dunks and, you know, doing stuff like charity games and things like that, things of that sort. I dunked on Warren Sapp one time in a charity basketball game as Hulk Hogan was our coach, you know. He's like, "Whoa, brother," you know, so, you know, as far as jumping goes, you know, that's always been my forte, you know, and that's what got me over here in Mexico, you know, my jumping. I did my main move is they call it the Air Corleone. And is basically a planche outside the ring, and it's purely off my athletic jumping, you know, so thank God.
You had brought up being in WWE Ohio Valley Wrestling. From the time that the WCW purchase happened, for a couple of years, that was basically what you were stuck in. You were stuck there, and then they brought you up. Then you were with Garrison Lance Cade for a while, then you were sent down, and you were brought back, and you did a Reflection of Perfection gimmick. Was there any point during all this stuff that you were sitting there going, what, I mean, pick something, give me a gimmick, you know, I got ideas? What was your mindset that kept you going until you ended up being partnered with Kurt Angle and Luther Reigns?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it was just timing. I really, really, I think in the wrestling business, everything is timing. And I think, you know, for me coming here in Mexico was great timing in 2006. But my time in the WWE, you know, it was always something to do with timing, bad timing or a little bit of bad luck, you know. And start by saying, you know, before all that stuff, you have to understand that I was one of the original members of Evolution. And originally, I did all the pre-tapes, all the vignettes for Evolution with Randy Orton, myself, Ric Flair, and Triple H. And I was actually the fourth member. And they pulled that plug the last minute. Because what had happened basically was, you know, Randy Orton came aboard on Evolution and he was getting over. So they teased the fourth member. The fourth member was me. I taped all the vignettes, everything. You know, imagine that. I mean, imagine that position being in Evolution, how different my career could have went, you know, from nothing against teaming with Garrison Cade or the Reflection of Perfection or something with Kurt Angle. But, I mean, Evolution, those guys, that was a pedigree, you know. I mean, these guys, you know, Orton's a multi-time champion, Batista multi-time champion. And you know, what happened was they hyped the fourth member of Evolution up so much. You know, I can remember, like, a week before they pulled the plug on me, they were having polls on WWE Raw and stuff and on the website, like, who's the next member of Evolution? And I remember the guys in the poll were like, Cast, Chris Jericho, Kevin Nash, you know, guys like that. I'm thinking, man, they're overhyping it. And sure enough, you know, the next week, Vince McMahon came in and he said, you know, I think we've kind of hyped this up too much and it wouldn't be good for you to, you know, come in. It could hurt you and it'd be very difficult for you. So we're going to pull the plug and we're going to put you with Garrison Cade and start your babyface tag team. And, you know, we had a decent little run, but nothing compared to what we had in being in the Evolution group. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, so I can't really, you know, we had a decent little run with Garrison Cade. They split us up. I went to SmackDown. I tried this Reflection of Perfection gimmick. And I enjoyed it. You know, I'm like a kid at heart. I like doing little things and making believe and stuff. That's why I love being Marco Corleone here, because it's honestly, in 4 years, basically, I've heard people say Mark Jindrak maybe 20 times, you know, in 4 years. It's incredible. It's a different identity, and I like playing that. Like, it's fun. It's like being a kid and playing make-believe. And, you know, the Reflection of Perfection was kind of the whole deal with the mirror and stuff, but they never really went anything with it, you know. Teddy Long was very, 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 entertaining as well, you know. Him on the mic, obviously, is he's very funny and very comical, and you know, but we just pretty much, that was a Velocity gimmick. We were in Velocity for like 3 months in a row, and very rarely did I get to do it on SmackDown, so that kind of fizzled out. And then, basically, with Angle, Kurt Angle and Luther Reigns, just was kind of getting bounced around, you know. So, I mean, it was nothing against any writing team or anything. It was basically, you know, maybe I just wasn't ready. Maybe I wasn't hungry enough. I questioned it, you know. Maybe I was doing something wrong. My style was different. I don't know. You know, I don't really have all the answers. But all I know is when I had a job and been wrestling my whole life, and all of a sudden I got fired in July of 2005, that hurts. I mean, that hurts. You second guess your career. Like, what do I do now? You know? And so when I came to Mexico, I didn't give a shit, you know, sorry the language.
It's okay.
I didn't give a crap. I didn't care at all. I didn't care at all when I came to Mexico, if I was in the first match or the fifth match. You know, here the matches are, the one being the least important, like the opening match, and five being the fifth match being the main event, you know, and I didn't care what match I was in. Of course, I was in the fifth matches and stuff, the finals. main event. But I mean, it didn't matter to me. I didn't care about belt opportunities. I didn't care about. All I wanted to do was be in front of people and savor the feeling of being a wrestler, you know, and because I thought I was going to lose it. After WWE, I thought my career was over. I thought I was going to go sell cars or do something corporate or do whatever. I don't know. It was scary. It was scary to have a career and then almost lose it. So when I came here to Mexico, forget about it. I killed it. There was no tomorrow, you know, and I think that's, if I ever, of course now, you know, Lucha Libre USA is Masked Warriors on MTV2 is my thing and we're building, you know, and I would love to educate the fans and show fans of the casual American fan what exactly Lucha Libre is. But I think, you know, the attitude I have now is, you know, there's no tomorrow, you know, so live your career to the fullest and, you know, enjoy it as if every day is your last and just like you do in life. And I think that's maybe what my problem was. It wasn't really, you know, choose this character, choose this, or give me a direction, or give me this. I think that's what WWE, I lacked in WWE. I was waiting for them to give me something. I was waiting for them to give me a cool character or a cool gimmick or a push, you know, whereas I came here and I didn't ask for it. I took it. You know, I let the people decide. I got over. I did extraordinary moves. I upped my athleticism. I upped my acrobatic moves. I blended in. I became like a luchador, an athletic, high-flying luchador, but only 8-9 inches taller at 6'6" instead of 5'8" or 5'7". So that's basically the change.
Now, you had said that you were booked to be the fourth member of Evolution before Batista, and that you had done the vignettes and the pre-tapes and all that. Do you harbor any sort of grudge or anything like that towards the creative and Vince McMahon for overhyping that angle and kind of blowing that spot for you?
No, not really. I just, like I said, it's timing, you know, and Vince was cool enough to, you know, sit me down in his office and tell me about that, you know, backstage at Raw, and that was, you know, coming from him, you explained it. Those things happen, you know, and it could have been horrible too, you know, if they overhyped and are looking for this major established superstar like a Jericho or somebody to join the group, and then here's this Mark Jindrak fresh out of OVW at the time, you know, and it could have been very difficult on me, you know, you know, you win some, you lose some, you know, and that's life, you know, but no, not at all, no grudges. Like I said, I don't, for any lack of what, success that I, or in WWE or underachievement of my part was due to me, not them. I see that now.
Now, you were one of, four teams to work a, tag team title match at WrestleMania 20. Now, we've heard on various DVDs and such that the guys are going, it was the greatest night of my life, you know, it's great to be on such a grand stage. Can you give us an idea of what the difference is working a WrestleMania as opposed to working, you know, a taping for Heat or Velocity or Raw? Like, what type of pressures are you under on that type of stage? And hell, in the end, was it actually the best time of your life, like everybody says?
Well, you know, the match I was in was a four-way tag team match, and I, you know, there was a lot going on, you know, and to be honest with you, the thing about WrestleMania, I can remember, that was WrestleMania 20, very epic, you know, the 20th anniversary in Madison Square Garden. That's kind of like the home base of the home base of basically of WWE, and you know, it's basically a cathedral, Madison Square Garden. But you know, Madison Square Garden holds as capacity. I don't know. I think that show there was what 19,000-20,000 or something, 21,000,
something to that degree. Yeah,
something to that degree. What I was kind of disappointed about was. And the same thing with WrestleMania 21 in Staples Center, same deal, was I wanted to be in front of a crowd of 65,000. Or, you know, like I remember when we signed with WWE and we did the Invasion, they flew all the 10 guys that signed with WCW, which I was one of them, myself, Sean O'Hare, Chuck Palumbo, like Stacy Keibler, Chris Kanyon, Billy Kidman, Shane Helms, Buff Bagwell, Booker T, you know, that whole group of 10 guys basically got flown up to Houston, WrestleMania 17 in Houston. And I can remember looking out in the crowd from the press boxes, and that night was, there was like 65,000 people. Now that's, that I could say if I wrestled in front of that, I can say that it would have been the greatest night of my life, whatever. But to be honest with you, you know, a packed WrestleMania in Madison Square Garden, I mean, they usually draw almost a sellout when they come there for Raw anyways, you know. So, I mean, it was, you know, a chance to win the championship in WrestleMania 20. It would have been great, but at the same time, I wish I would have been able to be in front of a crowd of 55, 60, 65,000 like this past year in Phoenix, you know.
He is Marco Corleone of Lucha Libre USA Masked Warriors, which can be seen on MTV2 Friday nights at 10 p.m. You can also, if you're of the Spanish language profession or you have somebody that speaks it and is going, well, I want the Spanish language announcers, you can watch it on Saturday nights on Tres, which is the Spanish language version. The Mexican wrestling scene, from what I've been told by people that have been down there for trips, kind of feels like the old WCW, WWE setup. If you could take us through what you worked for both of them, what's the major differences from AAA and CMLL, or are they basically just the same companies and they just have different initials to them?
No, well, first of all, CMLL, for being in both, see, I think CMLL, AAA is a little more, they're a little more known in the United States, and maybe as a whole, over the whole, basically the whole Republic of Mexico, they're more popular. But as far as the better company, I would say it's CMLL. And for this reason, like WWE has its cathedral in Madison Square Garden, the cathedral, for the greatest place to wrestle in Mexico is Arena Mexico. And that's where CMLL holds their TV events every Friday night. And I'm telling you what, that it's history. It's incredible. It's incredible. And it's incredible that CMLL holds shows every Friday night there, TVs every single Friday night, and they draw usually between, you know, 6,000 to 12,000 people every single Friday night, every single Friday night. So imagine that. I mean, if you held a TV in Madison Square Garden every single Friday night, I don't think, you know, they run that, those places like every 3, 4, 5, 6 months. So they don't get old, but I mean, imagine that if they held a show in any arena for that matter, you know, in the Staples Center every Friday night for WWE, you, after 5 or 6 weeks, 4 weeks, you would probably wouldn't get a huge, huge crowd, you know? I mean, but here in Mexico, that's the cathedral, Arena Mexico, and that's what the company CMLL. And CMLL is more of a style, like they're very traditional. Their company's been around. In fact, this September, they're going to have their version of WrestleMania, which is the anniversary. And I believe it's the 78th year, 78th anniversary.
Wow.
So that's basically like WrestleMania 78, you know, basically. You know, that shows you the history of that. And AAA is more, the way I was, I worked with them for a year, and I'll be honest with you, I hated it. And they run a very sloppy brand, and basically they try to copy WWE. They see WWE stuff and they try to copy them. And basically, to me, it's a mixture of Lucha Libre and backyard wrestling in AAA.
Ooh.
So I don't have a very great opinion of AAA. My year there wasn't the most exciting or the best, but CMLL, I have nothing but great things to say about that company. I mean, the history, the culture. Like I said, 70 this year's anniversary, 78. You know, and I mean, so that right there tells you the history.
I've been wanting to ask this question for 54 minutes because when I did the research on this, I said, "No way, this can't be true." Were you really banned from wrestling in Tijuana for a year for pulling down an opponent's tights, or is somebody ribbing me?
No, that's. You know, everything gets misconstrued in the internet. What had happened with that was we were wrestling in Tijuana, and you know, here my character here in Mexico, like just recently in the biggest magazine here called TV Novelas, I was voted, you know, kind of like People's People's America's 50 Best Looking People. I basically been 2 years in a row now, been this magazine, TV Novelas, which is their biggest magazine, basically they're hottest people in the country, the top 25. So I've, you know, apart from that, I'm kind of like a heartthrob, like a sex symbol here for men and, in this country. And, you know, so the girls, they love me. So that, you know, these guys, you know, a lot of my style is to the girls, you know, and you know, wrestling, some of these guys, they like to play jokes and they like to joke around. Well, we were in a cage match and I was wrestling against the Pedros del Mal. It's Damien Seyfe, and Aguayo, this guy named Terrible. And, I was climbing out of the cage. When I climbed out of the cage, you know, these cages aren't what you see in Hell in the Cell and stuff, or like even in more of the bigger shows here in Mexico, or with Triple R C Malala. It was an independent show, and these cages, I mean, God, I was worried, you know, when I was climbing over the cage, I was gonna fall out, or the cage was gonna break, or it was horrible. So I was just more worried about safety. So when I was climbing over escaping the cage, these guys pull my shorts down. So only exposed my butt. My whole butt was exposed. But, you know, when they pulled my shorts down, I had two options. I could release my hands from the top of the cage and pull my pants back up, or get over safely and then pull them up when I got to the ground. So I waited. My whole butt was exposed. They pulled my pants down. I didn't pull anyone's shorts down. And okay. Basically, I climbed over the cage and pulled them back up, and you know, it was a ha-ha spot, and people laughed and stuff, but the commission didn't think it was too funny, so they banned me for a year. And those guys, you know, that's what people, I got banned as well as three other wrestlers. And I'll tell you why, because an incident years back, Santo, they were in a match or something, and a similar occurrence happened is that someone's butt was exposed and it was haha, but he got suspended. Santo got suspended. So ever since then, obviously that was the grandfather clause. You know, you suspend Santo, you definitely get to suspend Marco Corleone, a foreigner, you know. So that's that. By no means, people make it out to be like I, you know, was pulling guys' shorts down and stuff. And
it just seemed that way. When I read this thing, I was going, no way, that can't be what happened.
Yeah, and I need my publicist to go and correct that on Wikipedia. I think it said something like that on Wikipedia, but that's what happened. You know, it's kind of funny now I look back on it, but I read all these types of things that I got banned from, you know, because I was pulling down people. It made me look like, you know, I was some kind of like guy going around pulling guys' trunks down, like, you know, like it and stuff. So, but that wasn't the case at all. I was the victim.
He is Marco Corleone joining us here. Is this also true that you actually wrote a Spanish language book for children involving school bullying?
I sure did.
Wow.
You know, like I told you, I completely was just suffering. I went from CML to AAA and I was just completely suffering. I couldn't stand working for the company. And, you know, thank God in today's day and age, these phones, these iPhones and these computer phones, these Blackberries are so easy to use. And so, you know, it's almost like a mini computer. And I remember taking these long trips and, you know, 3-4 hour car rides and bus rides and plane rides and around Mexico. And I wanted to do something. I've always had a passion for writing, you know. In fact, I've kept a diary here of all my experiences in Mexico, basically leading back to 2006, you know, because I always felt like, you know, something I always wanted to remember, you know. So but I always had a passion for writing, but not so much like wanting to be a, you know, write an autobiography or anything. So I had a chance. One day I was in a salon cutting my hair, and I was speaking with a lady, my stylist, and she was, you know, I was gabbing away, and, you know, of course I speak Spanish, but I have an accent, you know, I mean, you can tell that I'm a foreigner. And a lady getting her hair done, she hears my accent, and she's like, hey, you're American. And I was like, yeah. And, she goes, you know, obviously me too. And I said, well, really good to meet you. You know, she said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a professional wrestler or a luchador. She's like, wow. I don't know much about that. And, And I said, well, how about you? And she goes, well, I moved out here. I opened up a publishing company. I've written children's books and all that stuff. And I was like, wow, you know, just shooting the crap. I was just basically, I said to her, how hard is it? What's the process of writing a book? And she said, not at all. She goes, you know, obviously you're a wrestler. You have a lot of kids followers, you know, how would you ever consider writing a book? And I said, I'd love to check it out. And I went and met with her, and wham, bam, you know, just traveling. I'd write stuff, and I did the research on the topic. You know, I wanted to pick a topic that was beneficial to kids, maybe something like bullying, like drugs, like exercise. But I thought bullying would be the best. And because I was a victim of bullying, you know, like kids picked on me when I was little. I was tall and skinny, you know, and kids are cruel, you know, and everybody, it's such a big topic in the United States now. Everybody, almost 90% of kids have one time or another experience of bullies, you know, and so I thought it'd be perfect to write about. So I started doing the research, and in my time, I started writing and stuff on my phone, computer phone, in English. And then what I would do is basically I had an editor in English, and the concept is great. The book is called Las Primeras Luchas de Mi Vida, which means the first fights in my life, the early fights in my life. So basically, you know, I'm a luchador, I'm a wrestler, you know, but the first fights in my life were handling with the bullies, you know, getting over this barrier in my life. And I basically just talked about, you know, had the seven different subjects and insults and failure and physical aggression, internet, cyberspace. Basically, and I wrote the book in English, and I had an editor, I had a perfect English written, and then basically I translated it into Spanish. And I went through this publisher, and basically about 2 months ago I released it here in Mexico. It was kind of a dream of mine, and that's what I did. So yeah, I am an author now. I'm a real author. Basically, like I can say is, I saw all the things the guys did in WWE. You know, like when I was there, I saw guys like the Rey Mysterios, the Eddie Guerreros, you know, who was a very good friend of mine, and when I was on SmackDown, I saw all the things they were doing. You know, writing books and doing this and doing that and appearing on TV shows. And when I come to Mexico and I got over and I became a national star, you know, not just a wrestling star, a national star, and started appearing in soap operas and game shows. Like just recently, I was on a game show. It's called Cien Mexicanos Dijeron, which means basically what 100 Mexicans say. It's the same concept of Family Feud. So I was on Family Feud. I mean, you know, cool stuff. I used to watch that for school every day when I was little, and now getting to participate in shows like that in a different language, in a different country. It's a huge thing, you know, I patterned my career here after what I saw in WWE, the WWE marketing standpoint of things, you know. Making books, you know, expanding horizons, you know, music, you know, doing other projects with music and acting and stuff along those lines, and that's basically my formula. And you know, I'm a big goal oriented guy, and basically in 2009, one of my goals was to write a book. I thought it was going to be, you know, maybe something more towards wrestling, but you know what? When I had the opportunity, and it kind of dawned on me, wow, a kid's book would be great. I did it. And that's pretty much it.
I've got a bit of an observation with your work, well, not particularly your work, but the Lucha Libre USA Masked Warriors show as a whole. I'm all for getting different styles of wrestling out to the audience. I've watched a lot of CMLL. That's a tongue twister of a place. And AAA over the years on YouTube. And this is just a slight observation on my part. It could just be that I'm used to something in the previous shows I've watched. I've noticed that the Lucha Libre USA stuff, especially when it comes to the trios tag matches in particular, seem to be a lot slower paced than what I've seen from the guys in Mexico. Is this something that's done on purpose, or am I just going crazy?
I think what it is the influence of Americans. We have a handful. We probably have 10 Americans that are in our league, you know, and obviously everyone's mixed. I think a lot of it's basically you add, you know, I think the psychology of American wrestling is better psychology than the Lucha Libre. You know, Lucha Libre, you see a lot of dives and fantastic acrobatic moves, but sometimes people do moves just for the sake of doing moves, you know? Whereas in Lucha Libre USA, you still get your fantastic moves, but there's a rhyme and a reason for what goes on. You know, I don't know if it appears slower because, you know, we have a little more psychology in our matches, but that's the thing. I think it's just basically the mixing in of some American talent, you know? I mean, obviously the American wrestlers aren't accustomed to that fast pace and the acrobatic style, but I think over time, I mean, you'll see pretty much, you know, I mean, most of our Mexican guys are from companies of CMLL and AAA, you know, just so they've worked there, obviously, so nothing's really lacking enough. I think just maybe if it looks slower to you or slower paced, I think it's, you know, we added our matches have a little more psychology and I think the Americans that are on our crew, they're kind of adapting little by little to the Lucha Libre style and becoming more athletic and more acrobatic, just like I did. You know, I came to CMLL in 2006 and I started off wrestling kind of, you know, a little bit of the powerful WWE style, you know, but I lost that real quickly. You know what I'm saying? I changed it up. You know, you are what you hang out with and what you're used to working with and Lucha Libre. Little by little, I think you'll see. What'll be great is we'll eventually be at the same speed, but we'll have rhyme and reason for why we're flying out. You know, why is, you know, sometimes you see wrestlers in Mexico and they do these ridiculous, fantastic moves, and you listen to the crowd, and you don't hear anything. You know, like Teddy Hart, for example. I'd see Teddy Hart in AAA, and I think he's a phenomenal talent, you know, phenomenal worker. But I'd see him do some ridiculous, you know, crazy moonsaults to the outside and stuff, and it would get no really pop. It'd be kind of like whatever, you know, because you got to remember. The reason, you know, doing big moves like that, Arn Anderson told me this before. He told me, if you're going to do a big move like this or do a big move like that, make sure it changes the complexion of the match. You know, make sure you're doing it for a reason. You're not just doing it to say, hey, look, you know, hey, I can do a backflip. Check it out, you know. Do a backflip, you know, in a spot to outsmart a guy or outquick a guy. You know, don't do it just to do it, you know. And I think that's the problem with some of the Mexican Lucha Libre here is sometimes the psychology is a little off, but... In our league, you know, obviously we have some pretty athletic and crazy acrobatic guys, but at the same time, and we stress trying to have good matches, you know, good matches that make sense and appeal to the people, you know, that are entertaining.
Now, we've got characters in Lucha Libre USA along the lines of La Parca has Mini Park. When are we going to see a Mini Marco Corleone?
That would be cool.
You know. I've been looking for one forever. You find a guy that's maybe 5'6", 5'7", that has my build and my type of hair. You give me a call and you tell me, because I'd love to have a mini Marco Corleone.
I'll have a look around for you, mate.
Yeah, we'll scour the internet. If you are of that size and stature, radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com is the way to, we'll forward it along to the folks at Lucha Libre USA. This weekend's event got interesting before you guys ever even left LA with the signing, I don't know if it's for this event or this event going forward, of former WWE star Carly Colon. Or Carlito, what do you know about this? And is he someone that you're possibly looking, going, yeah, I'm ready for this world title tournament, and I'm also in the tag tournament this coming Friday on the show. Do you see him as an initial threat to you, or are you kind of sitting back there going, let's see what he wants to do?
No, I see, number one, as far as the program goes, you know, because... Besides being the, you know, a wrestler, I'm involved with the production of the show as well. I pretty much put together this whole roster. You know, pretty much I put the whole roster together that they are now. You know, because I have that bridge. You know, obviously, I know a lot of I found guys that maybe weren't given an opportunity right now or not doing much in their career, and basically that I thought to be very talented in Mexico, and brought them over to the United States. And guys in the United States who maybe have been a little docile for a while or not around or not working with the WWE, and scooped them up. And Carlito was another guy that I wanted to scoop up. And, you know, as far as the competitive measures of bringing guys in, and as far as competing with me in the tag team tournaments or the heavyweight tournament, that's one thing. But the other thing is I care about the product first. You know, I want the product to survive. And you know, Carlito is a great addition to our product. And not to mention, goes right in line with our whole concept. I mean, it's Lucha Libre. You know, obviously, you know, we have Puerto Rican characters, you know, we have Mexicans, you know, and him being Puerto Rican and, you know, his, you know, wrestling in Puerto Rico all his life with his, you know, his historical father, promoter, Mr. Colon. And, you know, it's a great addition, you know. I'm thinking he's going to be a technical because I think the people really like him. And he's very charismatic, and he understands, he speaks Spanish, and he understands the whole Lucha Libre. You know, he grew up, you know, Puerto Rican style is pretty strong, but at the same time, you know, they know about Lucha Libre. The Puerto Ricans know about Lucha Libre as well, and, he's a great addition. You know, people are really buzzed about that. Same with pickups like, Austin Kong, you know, her as well, you know. Basically, that's our thing. You know, we have a great core roster, and you know, every week out on TV, we're getting better and better and getting more steam. And you know, it's just like my Spanish, learning my Spanish. We say poco a poco, little by little, and that's the model. And you know, and picking up someone like Carlito is obviously moving in the right direction because he's going to help the company, he's going to put fans in the seats, and he's going to be a very, very exciting wrestler to watch on TV for the folks. And he goes right along, like I said, again, in symmetry with the whole concept of Lucha Libre.
One of the bigger breakout characters in the last 3 weeks is the man that's formerly known in the United States as John Walters, but for wrestling fans watching Lucha Libre, was it him, you, or someone else that came up with this R.J. Brewer being the son of the governor of Arizona? Or how did that come about? Because it's definitely getting some heat online on the chat boards.
Yeah, you know, well, I think obviously being Lucha Libre and the Mexican Lucha Libre style and our basically our company is made up of 75-80% Mexican, authentic Mexican luchadors. I think going on with Arizona right now, and I think it was something that we wanted to include and touch upon. And it would be a character that was instant heat, you know. And this guy, like I said, a guy like John Walters, you know, this guy worked for Ring of Honor, and I thought he was very, very talented. And the fact that we got to, you know, pick him up, and he's a great worker, and you know, really just a guy looking for an opportunity. And you know, we had this character, and it's doing well. You know, we're happy. You know, we created a character that's working, and people are getting behind. We're not getting behind, but may get more heat, you know. And like I've always said, you know, because Mexican Lucha Libre is different. Whether people are cheering or booing, all we care about is the reaction. People are booing him, but they're booing him because they're watching him. They're watching what he's doing, and he's an interesting character, and it goes right along with real current events and what's going on in real life with immigration laws in Arizona and stuff. And so we're running with it, and it's, you know, one of the brighter parts of our show. You know,
Go ahead, sir.
No, I said, you know, sometimes what you lose along the way is, you know, professional wrestling has always been a story of good versus evil, you know, bad guy versus good guy, one people hate against one people like, and sometimes, at least in Mexico, I see that being like a very gray area, you know, it's not, and sometimes in WWE as well, it's not so black and white, you know, sometimes Randy Orton's a rudo, and sometimes they take him as a technical, I mean, one day he's a heel, and the next day it seems like he's a baby face, and people like Cena one week, and then they don't like him the next week. You know, RJ Brewer is a guy that people hate, you know, 100% of the time, and pretty much anyone you put him against is going to be cheered and you know, a lot of support behind him, you know, and so it makes that perfect sense. Good guy versus bad guy, you know, this guy RJ Brewer, he's in favor of the Arizona laws and stuff, and that's the character he plays, and It's great. It's great. You know, it's very interesting.
We mentioned the event is this weekend in Las Vegas. You're actually going to be there this Thursday. Talk about what's going to be going on at the Ronald McDonald House on Thursday.
You know, they actually just mentioned that to me today. I believe we're going to have a cookout, or we have some kind of cookout or a barbecue. I think I'm going to participate in cooking for the kids. And it's going to be, you know, that's part of it. We're going to, a lot of those kids are going to be coming to the show and stuff. And, it's just, you know, it's the fact that we're all of us are very excited to come to Las Vegas and a city of that caliber and be able to perform in a big arena like Thomas Mack Center. And, you know, and just like any other company, or we like to give back to the community, you know, and it's going to be fun for us to go there and, you know, share a day with the kids. And, you know, and basically that's what the deal is, you know.
Is Spug alive? Paging Spug. He's not alive. Go ahead. Ask your question, man, because I know you've been dying to ask it.
I have been dying to ask it. Earlier we talked about the little internet rib about your shorts getting pulled down and the ban on you in Tijuana. I wanted to ask, you're amongst friends here, and there's really nobody listening. What's the best rib you've ever pulled on somebody?
Best rib. Man. Well, actually, the best rib that we pulled off, it was actually, it wasn't, we pulled it on basically the internet. We ribbed the internet. Back in, I want to say 2004, you know, like I told you, Randy Orton was my best friend. We traveled together. We were, you know, two peas in a pod. I mean, maybe 2003, 2004. But there's a restaurant, when we're in Boston, there's a restaurant called, I believe, Kowloon's, and it's like a Chinese restaurant. And it's a big, for years and years, all the wrestlers have gone there. And after the events, you know, the wrestling fans go there too, because they know that the wrestlers are going to be there. So basically, in this particular night, there was a couple hundred people waiting outside for autographs and stuff like that. So Maven, Randy Orton and I were sitting down, and, you know, just like we're a bunch of kids, so young kids having fun. And we these cops were inside, and Randy and I had mentioned to the cops, saying, hey, if we when we go out there, if we start like a little brawl, like act like we're fighting a little bit, will you break it up for us? Break it up and make it look like, you know, we want to make it look like there's big time heat, and we want to get it on the internet, you know, because fans take pictures. Fans put things on the internet. So what had happened, we did that. And how surreal it was, too. It was real weird. We were walking out, and there was, like, basically people on both sides. Now, we had smartened the cop, one or two cops on the inside, but we forgot we'd never smartened the cops on the outside.
Oh, crap.
So what had happened was, we're walking out, and I whispered, okay, now. And he, you know, right in the middle of all these people, like, what's your problem? Like, what do you mean, what's your problem? You know, just get out of my face, you know, that type of stuff. We had a big heated argument where he pushes me, I push him, and then we worked the fight. We worked the fight where, I mean, we're not punching each other in the face, but we made it look as real as possible, and it was pretty intense. And we did it, okay? But this led into, this dumped out in the outside. So, of course, when the cops inside were trying to break it up, we knew they were smart in the game, so, you know, Randy would kind of like push the cop off, you know, in a working way, and I'd shrug a cop off and come back to Randy. But when it tipped up, trickled outside, it was pandemonium. It was pandemonium. People were like, ah! People were screaming, taking pictures, and you know, it was very, 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 very serious feel. We made it look very, very serious. And basically, when we went outside, those cops didn't know. They weren't smart enough to it, so it didn't work at all when I'm shrugging one cop off who doesn't know we're working it. You know what I'm saying? So he thinks he's really getting shrugged off. So it got pretty, pretty messy pretty fast. But what had happened was Maven eventually broke it up. Okay. And, you know, the long story short, what had basically happened was the next day on the internet, we saw, you know, if you still type in on Google, if you type in Mark Jindrak, Randy Orton fight, Boston, Kowloon, there'll be some pictures that show up, and basically, you know, different articles on the actual And sure enough, there was pictures and stuff on there, and it was hilarious. Even our attire, what we were wearing was, this was before the WWE dress code policy was implemented also, so you can wear what you want to wear. Me and Orton, we were in Boston that night, but the night before we were in Springfield, and we went to this Basketball Hall of Fame store, and we picked up these ugly, ugly outfits, sweat outfits. I got the Boston Celtics orange, I mean green, and he got the Orlando Magic, you know, light blue. And he was wearing his get up, and I was wearing my get up. I looked like a frog, and he looked like a princess or something. and we're starting to fight outside, and all these people are screaming. But we pulled it off. We worked the internet for a day or two, you know. And even the next week at TV, the following week at TV, Pat Patterson said, "You boys are in trouble. Why are you boys getting in trouble?" You know, and we told him it was all a rib, you know. So we even ribbed some of the boys, but. Yeah, that's pretty much probably the biggest rib that I've done or been a part of. Ribbing the internet.
Jersey Girl in our chat room has been wanting us to ask this question, and we figured we'd save it for the closing. She heard the story that you were part of a tryout or something with the Remember the Titans movie. Is that a major regret of yours that you didn't, you weren't a part of that event at all? And what could possibly be, are there any regrets in your career, I think is what she wanted to know. And if you could give us some background on that story. I read bits of it in the Jim Barcelone piece, but please share it with the rest of us.
No, what had happened when I was in the power plant, in Atlanta, I had an opportunity to myself and a wrestler named Sonny Siaki.
I know Sonny.
Sonny Siaki. You know, I actually just talked to him for the first time in a couple of years last weekend, and you know, he's doing well. He gave his brother a kidney, so he retired from the sport of wrestling. He gave his brother a kidney because his brother needed a kidney, so he's doing well and stuff. But him and I went to a trial in Atlanta for Remember the Titans movie starring Denzel Washington. It was a football movie, and you know, at that point in time, I was 23 years old, so I could easily play a, you know, if I shaved my face, I could easily play a high school kid, you know. And there was a tryout, an actual tryout for the movie. But they were looking for 20, they were going to get basically 20 extras. Not extras, but more than extras, basically a football team, you know, do all the plays, to do 20 days of football, basically scenes and of that sort. So obviously they held a tryout, and one of the things I said was a 40-yard dash, and that's when I ran a 40-yard dash, and it was a 4.64040, a 4.64040.
Wow.
And I was wearing a pair of Jordans. I was wearing a pair of Air Jordans too, you know. That was another thing we used to do in the power plant. We used to run, we used to have races, foot races, and only one person ever beat me in a foot race there, and that was Johnny the Bull, and he beat me by a nose, but I've beaten him 10 times. We used to have races. That's what we used to do a lot in the power plant, just have competitions like that, you know, young, dumb, and having fun, you know. And but this movie, particular movie, I tried out, and I made it. They invited me back to do the scenes for, I think, 20 days. And at this point in time, I was in the power plant, and, you know, it just would have been pretty tough. The scenes every day would have went from, like, you know, somewhere along like 4 o'clock at night to like 4 in the morning. I mean, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 in the morning, you know, scenes like for 20 days, sometimes earlier. And, you know, I was at the power plant from basically 9 to like 2:33. So, I mean, imagine that, going from all that rigorous training to doing a football movie out in the Atlanta sun, the Atlanta hot sun in the midst of like a July, or I think it was August or May, or so. I don't know what month it was, but it was a hot month. And it just didn't, you know, I didn't think it was worth, you know, doing like an extra role where, you know, my face would be seen on camera a few times on, you know, or, you know, and throughout the movie to mess with my chances of pursuing my career of wrestling, you know. So that's basically, but no regrets. I have no regrets. No regrets in my career at all.
If you are in the Las Vegas area this weekend, tickets are $58, $38, $28. There are multiple ways I found out from watching Lucha Libre USA Masked Warriors to
follow these guys. If you're a Twitter person, which I'm not, despite all these people in the world saying, you got to do it, you got to do it, I'm not doing it. Twitter.com/LuchaLibreUSA. They also have Facebook, search Lucha Libre USA. They have a YouTube page. Also, the main site is Lucha Libre USA. This coming Friday night, I don't know why I keep saying Thursday, and I'm sorry. You can actually see our guest Marco Corleone team with a guy who's got an awesome segment, Lujo Esquire, this past week, the La Vida del Lujo segment with Tigresa, Caliente, and Chichi. Just, I'm sitting there going with the orange juice ready to drink, and all of a sudden I'm like, I better put this down, crap. He will be teaming with Lujo Esquire to take on Oriental, and is it Tinieblas Jr.? Did I pronounce that wrong?
Tinieblas Jr. Tinieblas Jr., and he's a second-generation wrestler. His father, very, very historically famous wrestler here in Mexico, Tinieblas Sr., so it's going to be a tough match, and, it's worth watching. These guys are, like I said, everyone brings something to the table. Guys like Tinieblas Jr., second-generation wrestler, as like a Randy Orton, like a Liz Mark, we have a guy named Liz Mark Jr. as well, for maybe you guys know him in like the late 90s in WCW. Liz Mark Jr., his father as well was a great, great wrestler in Mexico. So, I mean, it's kind of cool to, that's part of the wrestling culture, the mystery of the mask and the history, because you have a lot of second-generation wrestlers here in Mexico, as in the United States, as we're seeing right now, so... Yeah, it's a great talent,
Jr. In addition to that Vegas event, I believe it was announced on your website, August 28th, the Bojangles Coliseum in Charlotte, North Carolina will be featuring Lucha Libre USA and having a taping. We want to thank you so much for sticking with us. I know you said you wanted to talk English, so we figured we'd give you an hour and a half interview to do it in.
I appreciate it. All right.
Stay with us as we go to break here. We will be back with some World Wrestling Entertainment talk here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. This is Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
Wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as...
Chris Jericho,
Eric Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talents today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Brett Derry.
Candice LaSalle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
TJ Wilson. Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Over the past year, WrestleTalk Radio has held many great debates. We have determined who's the greatest intercontinental champion of all time.
Remember this! Nobody beats Mr. Perfect!
And even the greatest WrestleMania match of all time.
I can't understand. Stop it right now. That's it.
Starting July 4th, WrestleTalk Radio goes down south to find the all-time greatest WCW champion. It's the WTR Great Debate. Hear how it goes down every Sunday night right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Now bring mine up on it!
Hey everyone, it's Tim Stein here to tell you about a brand new podcast debuting soon, exclusively on the Wild Talk Radio Network. The History Of will take you on a fantastic journey as we look at some of the most famous rock groups, funny people, and actors and actresses of all time. Utilizing the video abilities of Ustream as well as the lossless stereo sound of internet audio, The History Of will bring a totally new experience to Wild Talk Radio. So make sure that you join me, your host, Tim Stein, as we take a look at the history of some of your most favorite people ever. Make sure to keep a lookout for this brand new webcast coming soon, only to Wild Talk Radio.
Hey, this is former WWF wrestler Rory McAllister, and you're listening to Wild Talk Radio.
Stevie Wonder wrote it, but the Red Hot Chili Peppers made it popular thanks to it being played over and over and over on MTV back when they actually played videos. And that's the funny part. I'm still stunned that this show is on MTV2 after the disaster that was Wrestling Society X. Thank you so much to Marco Corleone and the folks at Lucha Libre USA for joining us tonight. 877-588-9877. Option 1 is the way to join us on All Our World of Wrestling Radio. My name's Alan Wojcik. As always, here, keeping the fort down. I swear the show's going to get done under 2 hours one night. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I promise you. Mason Spugg are joining us here from Wrestle Talk Radio this Sunday at 11 p.m. They will be a part of a post-Hardcore Justice, the Last Stand event. I just wanted to get out a couple indie news notes that are non-WWE, non-TNA. If you're a fan of the SAT Tag Team, that team no longer exists. There's stories going around. Found this also on DOIWrestling.com, which is a Northeast United States-based site, that Jose Maximo has retired. He is pulled out of all his upcoming bookings, but his brother Joel will wrestle. According to his friends, Jose has become very spiritual and is leaving wrestling to pursue other interests. And we'll miss him because the SAT is one of the better indie tag teams in the world. Speaking of indie tag teams, I don't get HDNet thanks to my friends at Bright House Networks. Damn.
Those don't get NFL Network, but that's another story. So I didn't get to see this happen, but I did get tons of email at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com telling me, you gotta put this over, you gotta put this over. Okay, fine. Everybody wants to know who is the world's greatest tag team. Looks like at Glory by Honor 9 on September 11th, the next Ring of Honor pay-per-view, which is going to be at the Manhattan Center, Ramstein Ballroom, whatever it's called, in New York. They announced last night on ROH TV, the Kings of Wrestling, Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli, will take on the self-professed world's greatest tag team. That's right. Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas are coming to ROH, so if you weren't getting that event, you need to get it soon. This interesting tidbit before we go into full out in the WWE, had to bring this up. If you're a fan of George Lopez and Lopez Tonight, which is the late night show, I believe it's 11 Eastern on TBS, starting Tuesday night, I don't know if it's tonight or next week, WWE superstars are going to be appearing on the show to take part in a get to know your favorite WWE superstar tag segment. Contestants attending the show will win money based on how they predict the superstar will answer certain questions. Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, David Otunga, and Ron Killings, R-Truth, will also be doing individual karaoke sessions. Continuing the promotion of SummerSlam, Randy Orton will be a guest on the August 10th show. And it's also really weird. I wanted to do some interesting history tonight because we're on an anniversary tonight. August 3rd, if it means anything to wrestling fans, it means a lot to me because it was the night of SummerSlam 1997 held at the Continental Airlines Brendan Byrne Izod Center, whatever the heck it's called in New Jersey, was tonight. And it's amazing to look at this card to see who was on that card and actually working in the industry today. The opening match on this pay-per-view was a steel cage match between Mankind and Triple H. That's amazing that in 1997 that was the opening match of a pay-per-view. Also on that show, the Legion of Doom defeated the Godwins. And then there were several gimmick matches involving the Hart Foundation, which was the late Brian Pillman, the late British Bulldog, Bret Hart, the late Owen Hart, and Jimmy Anvil Neidhart. They were involved in several matches that night, such as Brian Pillman losing to Goldust in a match that forced him to walk around in one of Marlena's dresses. You also had Ken Shamrock win but lose the European Championship to the British Bulldog by disqualification. That match involved a can of dog food. Also on that night, Los Boricuas defeated the DOA. You also had the infamous incident with Owen Hart and Stone Cold Steve Austin, where Austin was dropped on his head with a pile driver to win the Intercontinental Championship. And it was also the night that many people felt that Bret Hart's WWF career, because it was called WWF at the time, ended because he won his final WWF championship that night by defeating The Undertaker and basically having a babyface Shawn Michaels be turned heel the same night. Mason Spug, were either one of you watching this pay-per-view, and what were your memories of it if you had? First, are you enjoying your medication, sir?
I always enjoy my medication, first of all. And second of all, you remember so much random shit. It's not even funny.
Hey, not random.
It is random, dude. You pull out the most random stuff out of your rear end that I just go, huh? Why is he even bringing this up?
It's history stuff, man. It's amazing to think that some of these guys are actually still working today all these years later.
Really? Really, I just got done watching countless hours of programming on WWE.com from today, and I'm still wondering how Steve Lombardi gets work, okay? But still, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because I watched Undertaker's debut match
from 91. It's Survivor Series. And you think of the people that were in the ring with him at that time, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Ted DiBiase, Hall of Famer. Bret Hart, Hall of Famer. Jim the Anvil Neidhart, road agent. Dusty Rhodes, Hall of Famer. Greg the Hammer Valentine, Hall of Famer. Honky Tonk Man, Hall of Famer. You think of all the people that were in that ring when he made his when Undertaker made his debut at WWE. And here we are almost 20 years later. And the dude's a legend. You know? So yeah, it is kind of interesting to think about, you know, the history in that perspective. But I did watch that pay-per-view if I remember correctly. Because I watched every pay-per-view, but I don't remember Triple H and Mankind being that cage match being the first match out.
It was one of the opening matches on that show. I don't remember if it was the actual opening match, but I remember it being very early on that show because he did the whole take off the mask and turned into Mick Foley or Cactus Jack Dude Love or whatever the heck his persona was. That was when I remember because China got involved at the door and all that kind of crap. And it was the old blue steel cage of stupidity.
Don't knock on that cage, man. Those cages are awesome.
I'm kidding.
Dude, those cages are awesome.
Oh, Sorokin is saying that it did open the show, so we were right, we were wrong, which either way. Mace, were
because
you watching?
That's right.
Yeah, were you watching wrestling at that point in your life, or were you off watching some anime?
What year was that? 97?
97.
That would be during the period where Australia pretty much went blank for wrestling. From the period of mid-95 to probably about the first quarter of 98, there was no way to watch wrestling in this country.
That's
so
sad.
I missed that. However, Thankfully, due to things like the SummerSlam anthology, I have the opportunity now to go back and relive those shows that I've missed.
Yeah. Now, the drive to this year's SummerSlam has taken us actually through SmackDown and Raw, which was a taped show this week, which made me immediately go, "Hi, Jeff Jarrett. Hi, Alan Wojcik. Why didn't you run a live event opposite this?" I don't know. I'm channeling.
Because he's not allowed.
Gotcha.
Remember, if Vince does anything, TNA aren't allowed to do anything either. Just like they're not allowed to run an anniversary show on an actual anniversary because Vince has put a pay-per-view there.
Damn commie bastards. That's what it is. This event, we'll talk SmackDown first just for the effect of... apparently now Rey Mysterio is added to the laundry list of people that put The Undertaker in a coma. I think my cat Sylvester possibly is involved in this too. And it has set up a rematch at SummerSlam for the championship. And later that evening, we had a revisit on a WWE match that I believe involved Al Snow, Mick Foley, or Bob Holly, where they ended it up by the water. And this event, I think, was somewhere in Texas, that it was Mysterio and Jack Swagger in a no DQ match. And poor Rey Mysterio's ring outfit's ruined forever by Kane. First to Mace, then to Spug. Are either one of you interested in seeing this rematch on pay-per-view, or are you just thinking, yeah, this is a setup, Taker's coming back at SummerSlam?
I'm very much eh about this match. I'm pretty much eh about SummerSlam, and when we get to the Raw talk, I'll elaborate on that. But that match between Swagger and Mysterio, don't they usually do that every single time they get near that damn river?
I think that's the case. You were just saying that obviously, Spud, this is a setup for Taker. Do you see Taker? I know we're not gonna preview this event until next week, but just to foreshadow it, are we possibly seeing Taker at SummerSlam, or is he coming back Night of Champions, which is a September event? What are you thinking?
I don't care when he comes back, to be honest with you. I really don't. If he comes back at Survivor Series, great. If he comes back Night of Champions, great. It's only a matter of time before he goes out for another 4 or 5 months again. So it's time for his annual coming out of hibernation and then going back into hibernation until WrestleMania.
Well, he could be traveling right now with them anyway, because he may be the reason why Michelle McCool and Layla are going to have to come to terms with something thanks to Teddy Long.
You know,
one
I'm
of you is going to have to cough up the belt. Yes, sir.
I'm beginning to think that WWE keeps Undertaker in the same cryogenic storage locker as the late Walt Disney, and they just bring him out when they need him.
Oh,
maybe Heenan was onto something early on in Undertaker's career when he said he may actually be dead.
That's harsh. As I was saying, Teddy Long must have finally got my email, because on this coming week's SmackDown, which is pre-taped, obviously it was pre-taped last week because they were in Mace's neck of the woods this past weekend. Either Michelle McCool or Layla is going to have to cough up a championship belt. Thank the maker. I'm not sure which one you want to have the belt on anymore. I don't know. One person who may be getting a belt, getting her belt back, because she never really lost it, would be the returning Melina Perez. Made her return this past Monday night on Raw after Alicia Fox, Jillian, and Tamina defeated Gail Kim, Natty Neidhart, Natalia, we have to keep it the corporate names here, and Eve Torres. And judging from your response there, Mace, you're sitting there going, just what I need, another diva back, or are you actually excited to see Melina?
No, I'm not excited by this at all. As I was chatting away while Raw was happening, the second she's come out, I've gone, yeah, this is great. She's going to become the number one contender. Okay, yeah, she didn't lose the belt, but what exactly has she done to make herself number one contender? She returned. Okay, I now have this plan for Spug and myself. We're going to go to the next SmackDown we can both get to. We're going to break the noses of both the Hart Dynasty so we get the tag titles. Then we're going to drop them to the Usos. Go away for a few months, come back, and instantly become number one contenders and get the belts back again. Because that seems to be the way you get titles in that company. You either break somebody's nose or injure them some way so you can get their belt, or you go away for a while and you come back and suddenly you're in top title contention. It makes no sense!
There you go, that's the formula.
You know what? Somebody, somewhere, within the Hart Dynasty, or Melina, whomever, but somebody in the back with direct contact to Vince has got pictures of him doing naughty things to Mae Young's hand she gave birth to, or these people wouldn't quit, wouldn't still be getting title shots.
We actually are two people short now of a seven on this Team WWE, Cena, Jericho, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, we're too short, because Edge, after losing to Wade Barrett by a countout, basically found our buddy Marky Mark and said, you know what, dude, I quit. And right after that, here comes our friend Chris Jericho, who says, it's my team and I challenge you for the team. And of course, heaven forbid, Marky Mark lose. It was pretty weird, because at first I'm sitting there going, Jericho tapped out. Holy crap, wait a minute. He didn't even have the STFU locked on, and he tapped out. So, and then of course it led to an interesting matchup for this coming week's event, thanks to the anonymous general manager, who, no teasing this week on who it is. We're going to see Edge and Chris Jericho put their differences aside to take on John Cena and Bret the Hitman Hart with the Nexus as the Lumberjacks. If this stands and we're still too short on this match,
Do either one of you think that this is going to still stay a 7-on-5, or is this a return of Taker? Because this could have been Triple H's spot if he hadn't been injured and not being able to come back. Could this possibly be the way they bring back Taker and possibly Triple H, Spug?
Triple H is out till at least December.
That don't mean anything, or no, what? He stands on the apron. I'm Triple H. I'm back, and that's all he does.
He messed himself up pretty good. He's not coming back till.
That's
till
a shame.
December. Yeah, I would love to see him, but you know, it's not going to happen. On the other hand, however, I could see Taker coming back that way, but more than likely, he's going to come back because of this crazy brother.
Right.
So.
Okay, so book either one of you. If they stick with the 7-on-5, who do you go with the 7-on-5 still, or are you thinking we're going to get another two guys tossed
in?
No,
you're going to get another two guys. So who is it right now? You got Cena, Henry, Kali, R-Truth, and Bret Hart, right?
Yep. That's your team, I believe.
That's your five right now.
That's Cena. It was originally Cena, Edge, Morrison, Killings, Kali, Jericho, and Bret Hart. So you still got that five.
You could add Mark Henry to the mix. So there's six.
And MVP then, sitting somewhere doing nothing except sitting on Tuesday, going, "Hey, I'm over here with Percy Watson."
MVP's always doing nothing. Unfortunately, they don't do anything with him, and it's sad. Who I put into it? Evan Bourne.
That's an interesting name, because he got crapped on by the Nexus, but then again, all of us crapped on him at some point, it seems like.
But yeah, you put Mark Henry and Evan Bourne in it, and see how that goes.
Do you agree with that, Mace, or do you got two other people you would plug in there if you were a part of creative?
Oh, no. I've got a completely different plan in mind. Like, you'll have Marky Mark and Bret Hart going up against Edge and Jericho. They're going to go into it. They're going to start going hammer and tong. All of a sudden, near the end, when things get really exciting and we're actually giving a rat's butt, the Nexus are going to swarm the ring, beat the crap out of all four men, and Cena's going to give a big epic speech about, "Now you see, this is why you guys should have never left. This is why you guys should come back with us at SummerSlam." And they both go, "All right, we're going to swallow our pride, and we're going to beat down these guys who just beat the crap out of us." That's creative's plan.
It could work. You never know. Going in, the only other matches announced so far are basically the two world title matches, Sheamus and Randy Orton, Kane and Rey Mysterio. This show also featured another. It's pretty amazing. Both companies, TNA Wrestling and WWE, have been putting on pretty good TV matches. We actually got to see Randy Orton and The Miz, which had been teased a couple weeks back. That ended with shocking RKO. I kept waiting to go, all right, they're going to move this match. There's no way Cena's going to not main event the show. He's got to main event the show. Hey, wait a minute. They're really main eventing their show with Orton and The Miz. Are you guys, have either one of you said, "I'm sick of the teasing of the Money in the Bank now. Can we let it rest?" Or are you going, "Just cash the damn thing in already"?
Oh, no. Let that thing build, man. I want to see Orton and Miz. I really do. For some odd reason, I want to see Orton and Miz. I want to see Super Gay against the most hated man in Parma.
And I'm there right with Spug. Get out Lego bricks and build this one as high as possible, man. Don't cash that thing in at all. But come on, we have to. There's two quick things. One, you gotta love the most epic of epic matches between Sheamus and Goldust. 1 year on.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere, and we're all like, "Yeah, that's oh wow, that's over." The other thing is, if WWE's merchant, Spug, before you start going,
sure.
I want to send a message out to WWE's creative merchandise department. If they do listen to this at all, I am telling you now, you want to make a quick couple of $1,000s on t-shirt sales,
give us a Sheamus fella t-shirt. You don't. All you need is picture of Sheamus on the front, looking like he's just stuck his finger in the socket to get the Don King haircut, and fella on the back. And I tell you what, that thing will sell bigger than Cena merchandise.
It might, but I tell you what, man. When I turned on my TV the other night and saw Goldust wrestling Sheamus, I was like, huh. Glad to see they pulled him out of a drag bar in Vegas and gave him work.
It almost seems that way. I was honest. I was sitting there going, that's right. They did fight a year or something ago there. And, it was thrown in there.
Am I the only one? Like, I'll throw this out to everybody in the chat room here in the little room. Am I the only one who is now expecting, because everybody is latched on to this thing of Sheamus saying fella all the time, do you want to see like a Ken Anderson style fella before it kicks into its music?
And more like his battle axe work. Lower Thor style, and I'm charging to the ring.
Yeah. If they ever turn Sheamus' face, just put him going, fella, at the start of his music, and people will pop.
I think it could be interesting.
I hate Sheamus. I'm sorry. I really do. I have a buddy who is full-blooded Irish. Like, second generation off the boat. He has an accent. And I was joking with him the other day. I'm like, if I go to Ireland, do people over there really look like that? And he looked at me and he started laughing, and he goes, if that dude really stepped one foot into Ireland, he'd get his arse beat within 30 seconds. And I about died. Wow.
That's an interesting thing, because when he was in FCW and I was covering them, that was a joke that I kind of had going. It's like, okay, you know, it could be. It was like when I met Santino, it was just like get a couple drinks in him and Santino disappears. So it's kind of like, okay, is he really? Because at that point, his European name when he wrestled was Sheamus O'Shaughnessy, and I'm going, I don't know. It'll be interesting. This Sunday, Monday's TV will definitely be interesting, and we'll be tuning in this Friday night for SmackDown. And then don't forget, 10 o'clock Eastern, you've got Lucha Libre USA. And, of course, we'll be watching this Thursday. If you're free tomorrow night at 9 o'clock and you like these two guys and you think, wow, they know a truckload about wrestling, you ain't seen anything yet. Talk about your show, boys.
This is pretty much a show where we have no clue what we're going to do until we actually get together for the show. Otherwise known as Otaku Talk Live, which is basically Spug, myself, and Omega talking everything geeky, talking movies, talking video games, talking whatever we dig up on the internet, usually midgets as well for some reason. You know, this wouldn't be the radio
midgets
network. Exactly, because it's midgets. Quite possibly this week we might look into a top 15 Disney villains list that I was able to pull up. So who knows what we're going to talk about at this point in time. The only way to find out is to tune in 9 o'clock tomorrow night right here on wildtalkradio.com.
And speaking of minute to minute, moment to moment, and night to night, we're not 100% sure if Cindy Sin's sabbatical in Ibiza and other ports of romance and love are over yet. She was mentioning she may stop by tonight, she may not. I guess she found somewhere else to be wonderful in. So if she's not doing anything goes, you can tune into this station, this wonderful internet site that's wildtalkradio.com, and you can hear DJ Stein spin the wheels. I may try to steal a night from him if nobody's doing anything. I'll be just like, yeah, I'm going to DJ. Why not? I'll bring out my stack of records. This Friday, 6 o'clock Eastern.
No. Moving on.
I can't mention him. That's right. He's in the toilet. Well, can I DJ Friday night?
I don't know. We'll see. Talk to Tim.
We'll see. Yeah, and the amazing part, he talked on the show.
Yeah, huh. How about that?
He's talked. He didn't talk wrestling. He just talk to yell at me, but that's okay. But he talks. He's on Thursday nights if the lovely Cindy Sin's around and anything goes. He's also around Saturday nights, midnight-ish, with the Godfather Extreme Rob Parks and anyone else that wants to come on to CB Radio. And, of course, this Sunday...
Hold on. We're doing ECW Tribute and probably UFC Recap this Saturday. CB Radio. Check it out.
Interesting. And we'll be recapping Hardcore Justice, The Last Stand, this Sunday. I will be there, Mace will be there, Spug will be there, possibly Will, if his job allows him to. The Almighty Omega will be there. And, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Tim Stein, will be there as well.
Spug's pills.
We'll see how his event goes Thursday. We've checked on eBay. The gallbladder is up to $450, and we're very happy for you to do that.
I'm selling that to a Warhammer 40K fanboy. I'm not even kidding.
Okay.
I'm gonna tell some nerd that it was blessed by Nurgle, and I'm gonna get $1 million.
More on that tomorrow night on OTL.
That is epic. I want to thank our guest, Marco Corleone, for joining us. As mentioned, Lucha Libre USA is the website. They are on Friday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern on MTV2. And if you want to try the Spanish language, MTV3 on Saturdays at 10 p.m. And believe it recaps a couple times. Check your DVR listings for that one. I want to thank Jason Dederich and Brad Dykens for giving me the form each and every week. I always said I'm the luckiest SOB on the planet. I get to talk about what I love to talk about, and that's professional wrestling. And I get to do it with these two great gentlemen this week again. Thank you so much to Mace and Spug for joining us, to Rockin', our technical producer, the chat room listeners for sticking with us. I'm telling you, this show is one of these days... I'm actually going to pull it off where I have no guests, no nothing, and I'm going to do 2 hours.
Liar.
We're in discussions. It's not a 1,000% lockdown, but we can tease the possibility of former WWE, WCW star Bill DeMott. He has a promotion called New Energy Wrestling that is going to be involved in a show next weekend. We're going to try to get him on. If not, we are working on many interviews and the possibility of twank. What's the technical term? Is it twatting?
Tweeting?
Yeah, that thing. We're possibly going to do that. We're not
sure. Come on, fans. Email radio at onlineworldwrestling.com. Get Alan on Twitter.
Yeah. And we're going to close the show with, believe it or not, of all the cover tunes we did tonight. There's one song that Sorokin found that is the most covered song in music history. And it was written by two guys named John and Paul. And it's one of the greatest rock songs ever written. And it's Yesterday. So thank you for joining us. Go to Click Wrestle, go to iTunes, and find this podcast. And thanks to WTR Productions. Have a good night.
All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why?